Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, October 5th, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. And if you're listening live over another network and you'd like to ask us a question, you can make a comment or make a comment. You can call on number at 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698. Radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have any questions or comments. If anyone also would like to ask a question through email, you can send your questions to questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. It's questions with a plural. And please support our business partners. You can see their banners on the left, right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side, right above the blue bar. Okay, let's start off. We're going to look into God's Word first. We're reading out of Proverbs chapter 14. Is it 14? Hold on a minute. It is 14. I thought it was 11. Let me just double check. Okay, I guess it'll be 14. We'll be reading, let's see how many verses. I had looked at verse 11, but I think we had read that already. I will read 1 through 12. Okay, Proverbs chapter 14, 1 through 12. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. He that walketh in his uprightness feareth the Lord, but he that is perverse in his ways despiseth him. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them. When no oxen are, the crib is clean, but much increase is by the strength of an ox. A faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness will utter lies. A scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not, but knowledge is easy unto him that understandeth. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of the fool is deceit. Fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. The heart knoweth his own bitterness, and a stranger doeth not intermeddle with his joy. The house of the wicked shall be overthrown, but the tabernacle of the upright shall flourish. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Okay, that was Proverbs chapter 14, 1 through 12. Okay, last week we read a couple of memos going to sheriffs. We've sent two memos out, and I believe we have two more memos going out this week. Or one will be going out on Wednesday, and the other will be going out on Friday. Is that correct, Gary? We're all done with
that
those other two
plan.
Memos?
Wednesday number three is going out.
Okay. We might want to start Tuesday night memo, you know, after 5 o'clock. Stop
pumping. I don't have a problem
with
that.
Sheriff's done. Okay, get the sheriff done first. And then we're also copying every single elected official on the federal and state level. And the purpose of this, of course, is to shake them up, to realize that we're informing the sheriff on what his duties is and what the law is and how he can recognize crime in the courtroom and crime by elected officials. So hopefully they'll start to be a little more frightened about what they're doing, especially if the sheriff or one of his deputies is present, because right now they seem to break the law right in front of these people because they're unable to know what the law is. But the next one going out is memo 003. I believe all these memos are up on our website, so you can get a copy at powerofthecountysheriff.com. That's power. The county, oh, let me see. I think it's the power. No, power. P-O-W-E-R. Yeah, powerofthecountysheriff.com. And that does link to our site, but it's a page created especially for the sheriff. And we have an open letter to him right up on top, and that talks about the duty. We had read that a couple of weeks ago. And then basically this is information concerning his duty and jurisdiction and rights and a lot of information. But down towards the bottom, I believe it is, unless it's on the top, let me see where it's at. Not sure exactly where I put this. Okay, there should be a copy of these memos. Maybe it's on the bottom. Okay, yeah, right down on the bottom. Documents 001, due process, 002, common law, 003, chief law enforcer. We're going to read that one. We might read number four, and I think we're going to. I don't have a copy up there, but the question on number four is, what is a sovereign? I got a call from someone this week, last week actually, about someone that was arrested, and the only thing that's written on his paperwork in for the court is the federal case, is that he's a sovereign. Okay? So, I was just writing on the sovereign, so it led me to push that as the next one, number four, of our memos. Okay, here it is. We're going to read number three. Like I said, four is not up there, and I apologize for that. We will post it up later as maybe the evening goes, or at least after the call, we'll post it up there. And this is to all county sheriffs and U.S. Marshals, and carbon copied to all federal and state elected and appointed servants. It's from We the People. It's reference to your duty to know and enforce the law. Constitutional Law 101, Chief Law Enforcer. The U.S. Supreme Court has concluded, as supported by more than 800 years of history, the sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county chosen by popular election. His principal duties are to aid of the criminal and civil courts of record, that's common law courts, such as serving process, summoning juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction, Hartson versus Langston. So one of his jobs is to summons the jury. Sheriffs and U.S. Marshals need not feel intimidated by judges, attorneys, or other elected officials. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the sheriff and marshals cannot be diminished by those in the legislature, court, and state constitutions. According to Marbury versus Madison, which was well-settled law for more than 200 years, the commission of the U.S. Marshal being the chief law enforcer is the sole act of the President of the United States, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2. Once the secretary affixes his seal to the act, it cannot be undone, not even by the President. Thereby, like the sheriff, so is the U.S. Marshal, in that only the people, through an indictment, can remove him from office for not upholding the law of the land. As concluded by Marbury versus Madison, if it were not the case, they could not enforce the law unimpeded as chief. When a sheriff or marshal depends upon lawyers to interpret the law, he shirks his responsibilities, abdicating it to another. And we, the people, did not elect lawyers to be our sheriffs. If the sheriff concludes that a judge or any other elected or appointed official has violated the law of the land, it is his duty to make an arrest. The final conclusion of the matter is then in the hands of the people through the grand jury. If the sheriff or marshal had mistaken, the people will not indict, and the sheriff or marshal cannot be held liable for doing his best to enforce the law. And quite frankly, you should arrest anyone who threatens you for enforcing the law as you see it. More often than not, sheriffs and marshals are intimidated by judges and prosecutors and feel frustrated in not being able to indict the many criminal judges and prosecutors for fear of removal from office by the same, or by some other elected criminal that would perform the felony rescue for them. Fear not, for we the people are behind you, and if you need help summoning a grand jury from your county, you may call the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which has its presence in all 50 states, at 845-229-0044, and we will assist you and inform you. The sheriff should not rely on a prosecutor, that is, the fox guarding the hen house, to call the grand jury. Your authority is clearly found in history, and Hartson versus Langston, quoted above, in that the sheriff or the marshal ought to summons the grand jury. And remember, if you are still concerned, you can always seek the indictment first, putting the weight of the decision of the arrest onto the people. This memo is to assure you that we, the people, are willing to assist you in any way we can in order to bring justice back to our out-of-control courts. Be consoled by Jefferson, who said, "Every government degenerates when trusted to the rulers of the people alone. The people themselves, therefore, are the only safe depository. And to render even them safe, their minds must be improved to a certain degree." Thomas Jefferson, notes on Virginia. Wherever the people are well informed, they can be trusted with their own government. Whenever things get so far wrong as to attract their notice, they may be relied on to set them right. Thomas Jefferson to Richard Pierce. Let this memo serve as invitation to join the people to set things right in our courts and thereby in our government. For more information, visit powerofthecountysheriff.com, memo 003. Okay, another one, we're going to be sending this one out on Friday. So that one's going out this Wednesday. It's going to be faxed to every sheriff in America, every marshal in America, and carbon copied to every elected official in the federal and state, and that includes also all judges on federal and state levels, all 94 federal court districts and so on. Constitutional Law 101, Sovereign. What is a sovereign? To all county sheriffs and all marshals, from We the People, carbon copied all federal, state, elected, and appointed servants. Reference, your duty to know and enforce the law. In the United States, sovereignty resides in the people. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will as thus declared. Perry versus the United States. Confirmatio satorum. Sovereign people shall not be taken or imprisoned or deceased or outlawed or exiled or anywise destroyed, but by a lawful judgment of his peers by the law of the land. Magna Carta, chapter 239. High treason, Black's Fourth. Treason against the king or sovereign. It will be admitted on all hands that with the exception of the powers granted to the states and the federal governments through the Constitution, the people of the several states are unconditionally sovereign within their respective states. Langston versus Smith. The doctrine of sovereign immunity is one of common law immunities and defense that are available to the sovereign. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and the source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law as defined and limitation of powers. Yickwo versus Hopkins and Terry versus Ohio. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. Langston versus Smith. Sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and foreign courts cannot condemn influences persuading sovereigns to make the decree. Fire Insurance Company of Moscow in Russia versus Bank of New York and Trust Company. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. Hurtado versus the people of the state of California. To presume that the sovereign forever waives the right to exercise one of its powers unless it expressly reserves the right to exercise that power in a commercial agreement, turns the concept of sovereignty on its head. Marin L. Versus Jicarilla Apache Tribe. It is the public policy of this state that public agencies exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereign of the country. But they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. Chisholm versus Georgia. Conclusion. When one of we, the people, is accused by law enforcement agents of being a terrorist because they acknowledge that they are a sovereign, that law enforcement officer engages in high treason. When a judicial officer incarcerates one of we, the people, because they are a sovereign, that would be subversion against we, the people of the United States of America. Our founding fathers were sovereigns. So are we, and so are you. Any elected or appointed servant who targets liberty-minded people because they are sovereign is a tyrant. They are the real terrorist, and they are the ones who should be arrested for terrorism. People who claim to be sovereign and assault or kill police officers are criminals and murderers. We are not aware of any sovereign group in America that are terrorists. It is the fabrication by the enemy of liberty that are destroying our courts and our Republican form of government. For more information, visit powerofthecountysheriff.com, memo number 004. Okay, so those are the two memos that will be going out this week. Like I said, one on Wednesday, or one on Tuesday night, we'll start pumping them. And then the last one we'll start pumping out on Friday, or Friday night. They will go to all the sheriffs and marshals first, and then followed up by all the elected officials. So by next Monday, they should all have them. The following week, we'll have two more memos we're working on right now. Matter of fact, I think we even got the next two already done. And we'll read them next week, but they will be going out next week. And we'll continue that. This is, again, one-page memos. That's what they are, just one-page memos. And the purpose is to educate the sheriff. We've given them the foundation of their of what their duty is and what the law is in some a long memorandum some time ago, and I think it was 10 or 12 or more pages. But now it's just a matter of sending one page at a time and really trying to educate these people and also let the other servants in government to know that the sheriffs are being educated and the marshals are being educated, and that it is their duty to arrest these people when they break the law, such as going after we the people because we're sovereign. And, of course, other things that these people chase us down for, it's ultimately because we want liberty, and they ultimately want to subvert the United States of America. Okay, let's see where we're at now. Real quickly, I want to go through, someone had given us a I think sent an email or something to a couple of us. I don't remember well. Maybe it was written on one of our pages on National Liberty Alliance concerning the fact that we had changed our cost factors for the money necessary to mail out all the paperwork for people that we're doing habeas corpuses for. And we kind of took a guess, $30-$35, but recalculation is more towards $60. And someone was concerned, thought it was too much, and so on and so forth. But we did want to make it clear where these costs come from and what they are. Anybody who could follow along with this, I'm going to go through this very quickly. It's going to be mathematics, so you're going to follow the mathematics, and I'll probably skip a whole bunch of mathematics, just go to the conclusions here. But you can find this on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Look on the frowny face on the right side. When you come down on that page, you can click on any of the types of cases that are available. There are seven different types of cases that we take on. So you click on any of those pages, and at the bottom of those pages, you'll find the same thing on every one of them. And I'm going to read it. The following is a breakdown of the hard cost for each habeas corpus filed. Habeas corpuses, there are 15 pages. They equal 2 ounces of mailing, which costs us 93 cents for postage. The default is 11 page. It also is 2 ounces, it's a little over an ounce, making it also 92 cents for postage. We figure that toner costs us $40 a box, and we didn't even consider the color. And I do know my color goes out, and I hardly ever use color, but color goes out every once in a while, and I got to replace that too. But anyway, we figure about 2,000 pages per toner container, and so that brings it to about 2 cents per page. We need to send it out to at least a minimum of 6 respondents, and also to the petitioner, and also filing one with the federal court. So that's generally at least 8 pages filed out. And then we also print off a copy for ourselves. So that's 9 pages. Let me see. Maybe I go back. Actually, 6 respondents. It should have been 5 respondents and the judge and then the petitioner and then one for the file. So it should be 6, 7, 8 altogether. 8 copies normally. But some cases have 9, 10, and even more. CPS, APS probably has more. Especially when there are children involved. If there are 3 children involved or 4 children involved, there's a lawyer for each one of them. So it's 3 lawyers or 4 lawyers or whatever the case may be. But the minimum is 6 respondents, 1 petitioner, and 1 file. So we'll call it 8. So a total of 8 copies, it's 208 pages, which equals about a half a ream, which cost us $3 for a half a ream. The total mailing, 7 times 2, 7 people. One gets, of course, filed here in the office, so it doesn't get mailed. So 7 mailings twice. The first mailings that go out is the habeas corpus itself. It's a copy of the petition for the habeas corpus and the habeas corpus. It is sent out to all parties involved, including the federal judge. So it's a minimum of 7 mailings, and that's also done a second time because they will, they always default. So once they default, we'll send out the default papers again. So there's 7 mailings twice. So 14 envelopes at 23 cents apiece is $3.22. Stamps, that's 93 cents times 14, 7 and 7, is $13.02. Certified mail, $3.45. We do 4 certified mails. The first mailing out for the petition and for the habeas corpus and the habeas corpus, we always certify it to both courts. So federal court and the state court or whatever that other court might be, the de facto court. So that's 4 certified mails times 345, which I got 690, so I made a mistake in my mathematics here. It should have been twice that, 12, should have been 13, 612, 1380. But anyway, toner, 208 pages at 2 cents each, $4.16. For total cost per mailing for both mailings is $44.10, and they did make an error of $6.90, so it's right there, it's $50 and $51 about that. Then there are followed-up letters, which usually will be certified, which we haven't calculated. And then the cost for additional respondents, we figure about $6.30 each. So if it's another case where they have 9 respondents instead of 6 or whatever, it's going to cost us $6.30 for each. So as you can see, even $60 really just barely covers it. And there's no leftover monies here per se to cover the cost of those people who can't afford to give us money but want a case taken care of. Now, we do not, we don't reject any cases unless it's just an inappropriate case for us to take. But we won't reject the case because people can't give us a donation to help us offset that cost. So we do ask people when they do file the paperwork at some point. We ask them when they send us their habeas corpus, not the habeas corpus, when they send us their original copy of the sworn affidavit, that they send $60 or more to offset the costs. If you figure if we send out 10 a week, which pretty soon we will be getting to that kind of a level, we're moving very quickly on these things now, but if we send out 10 a week at $60 a piece, that's $600. We've got to come up with that $600 somewhere. And we take some of that, of course, out of the donations that come in. And we don't get that much in donations, unfortunately. We only got about 300 people, if that, that actually support National Liberty Alliance. Even though we have thousands of members, a lot of people just don't give. We ask for $5, and again, let me ask again for anybody who's not giving, at least $5 a month. I mean, that's less than the tax on coffee and a roll every day for, a month going to work or whatever. It's less than a tax, $5 a month. And, of course, if you can afford more, it's appreciated. And so we really are on a shoestring budget. We barely make the bills every month, but we do make them. And once in a while we have something extra, and and we'll be able to pay for some of these people who can't afford to have it sent out. But what we will do is we'll send out those people's, once we get the case, or someone's case, into the, what's called the queue. And we do have a page here where you can see where your case is at. If you go to the directory and click on track habeas corpus petition, you click on that page. And I'm going to fix that. I'm going to update this course fact here because there's two errors in there. But in any event, we have a process that it goes through. First, it goes through intake. And once intake is complete and we have everything we need for that person, it will then show up here on this page, and it'll say intake. That's the status of that particular case at that point. Once it moves from intake and it's taken on and processed, it moves into processing, that means we're developing the paperwork and getting all the paperwork perfected for that case. Once that's completed, it then moves into queue. Okay? Now, once it's queued, that means the next thing is we just have to choose a date and send it out. Now, at that point, when we receive the person's affidavit, sworn affidavit, in the mail, once we receive that and hopefully receive $60 or more, that's when that case would go out. If they send us the affidavit and they don't send us money because they're broke, then it's going to kind of sit there for a while until we have some excess money from someplace where we can pay for that to send it out. Once it's sent out, it then moves into the position called served. We serve all papers on, we send them out on a Friday, which I think we're going to move towards a Thursday because they're never going to get it on a Friday. They'll get it on a, they may start to receive it on a Saturday, but they're closed for business, so they'll get it on Monday. We really want to make sure these people get these papers on a Monday. We also fax these out on a Monday, too. So we'll be faxing out over the weekend, usually. So they'll be mailed on a Thursday or Friday. They'll be faxed on a Friday night or a Saturday. And so Monday morning, all of the participants will have the copy of being served for the habeas corpus. It then goes through the process of a week. Monday doesn't count. They got 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If they fail to answer for by 5 p.m. their time on Thursday, it then moves into the default. And so on Friday morning, we then mail out the following Friday morning, we mail out the defaults. We then give them about 7 days. If the court does not respond within 7 days by letting the individual go or stop the action, whatever it is that they're doing, if they don't do that, okay, then it goes into a point where we call resistance. If it's successful, then it moves into the success file. And that's how we're tracking this, and people can watch and track their own cases once they get in here. You can see down here we have cases that have gone through. Some of them are in resistance, some have been reserved, and some of them have been success. So that's one way you can track. And again, the whole thing is really tied into getting all the paperwork done and getting your copy of your sworn affidavit, and like I said, hopefully with $60 or more to offset the cost. And if you send us more money, obviously it goes into the kitty for someone who doesn't have the money to send theirs out. So that's our process. We're moving very quickly, and I'm going to call upon the secretary in a short while, and she'll probably give you more detail on this. And also, and her name is Linda. And I think she's got a few other things that she wants to announce. We're going to call on her in a minute. Let's see. Well, matter of fact, maybe we'll call on her now. Linda, are you in right now? I think I saw you in on the board. I don't know if you came in on the phone yet.
Yeah, John, see Linda. She's on a VoIP line. So I think what you need to do is ask for her to just go into Q&A and ask her to go
well,
into the
if she's in a VoIP, if she's coming in on a VoIP line, she can still come in and unmute herself by having calling in on the proper number. You know, I mean using the proper code. Okay. But if she doesn't know that, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I didn't know she could use the moderator code on that.
Oh, yeah, she can. Or when she comes in, they ask her for the code, and she just uses the moderator code, that's all. And the moderator code gives her ability to flip back and forth.
Well,
she should be unmuted, but
that.
Maybe she didn't know that. I don't know if we can find her.
No, I didn't
need
that, and I was helping her.
Let's do this. I'm going to go into Q&A. Now, please, nobody go into Q&A. Do not hit star 6, okay? The only one I want to hit star 6 to go into the queue is Linda. Linda, hit star 6, and then we'll give you an open mic. And also, Paul, you could move into the queue also. Star 6 for Paul and star 6 for Linda. Paul, are you out there? Paul from Long Island. Okay, let me open up Linda. Is that you, Linda?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'll go right ahead. Now, I may go dark for a minute because my headset is starting to beep, which means the battery's dying. I've got to change headset, but go right ahead, Linda.
So you wanted me to elaborate more on the process that we're doing?
Anything that you want to add on to what I missed, and I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to cover or mention this week to update people on the things you're doing. Okay. But keep it short, but go right ahead. Meanwhile, I'm changing my headset.
Okay. Yes. Well, there have been a lot of changes, and I have had some people asking me about them. So maybe I can explain why they're happening and what's happening. I've been working with John, and I've learned a lot about the habeas corpus. And it's important to remember that once we're in the courts, we're not going to need the habeas corpus. The habeas corpus is to take us out of the jurisdiction of the corporate courts, of the statutory courts. So when the common law grand jury of the people are in the courts, we'll never need to write these. And we expect that we will be vigilant enough to never let this corruption happen again. But that being said, we will always teach the habeas corpus, starting from kindergarten, starting from the mother's lap, because the habeas corpus is our right to have due process. And we always want people to know that we have that right and that we will ensure that right. So we pondered this difficulty in teaching a lot of people how to write them, and we were, it's very important. We've redone the intake forms, and if you study them, as we're going to do in the Tuesday night meeting, you will see that it's very specific what we are asking for. We were getting a lot of information that we were not asking for, and that's like having all the possessions you own spread all over your house, and so you can't find what you need. So it was very laborious for us. So we were able to design a system where the intake form is so very precise. And we are almost finished designing a merger so that we can call up the intake form case type that we want and merge that to the document that we want. And then I only have to check that it all happened correctly. Now, in order to do it that way, it is absolutely essential that the intake form is correct. So we have assigned that responsibility to one person, and that's Daniel. Now, he is putting together a team as he needs that and as he sees people qualified. And I have advised him that at first he should check everything they do, and he should be the only one that deposits that finished intake into the file depot. So he is the only person that has access to the file depot, and he only has access to the number one intake spot. All the rest of it, I and John have access to so that I can process them and put them in the queue, and John has already explained how he'll take them out of the queue and we'll follow them. The other thing that I'd like to speak to that I haven't heard John speak to yet tonight is the resistance process. Although he really did, because he talked about that at the beginning when he talked about the letters that we're writing to the sheriffs. We realize that when we get a default judgment, the courts are going to just sit on that and not do anything. They're not going to give us what the default asks for. They're not going to let the person out of jail or have CPS return the child or give the person back the mortgage, the title to their home or any of the things that we're asking for. So they're going to sit on it. And if we let more than a week go by, they're going to say to themselves, this group figured out what we didn't think they could. They figured out the writ of habeas corpus, but they haven't figured out how to enforce it, so we can just ignore it. Therefore, it's very important for us to enforce it. And, of course, we've known that it's not the people that are going to arrest the ones who don't obey the law. It's the sheriffs. And we have said for a long time that every one of our 4,500 members needs to talk to their sheriff. But that's a very frightening thing for people, especially if they don't know what to say to the sheriff. So we have this sheriff's page, and I encourage you to go to it, read the letter, study it. See if you can close your eyes and outline it. Study it until you can make an outline and find a listening ear and try to tell them what's on that page without looking so that you really know it. And then watch the videos. There's two, and they're very impressive. I'm 68 years old, so it meant a lot to me, the one about roller skating, because we did that so much when I was a child. I don't know if there's even roller skate rinks around anymore, but we did it. And I've seen videos of places where they don't have so much road signs, and people manage how they're going to drive. In this little village in Mexico where I live, we don't have any road signs or any traffic lights, and everybody watches everybody. You watch their face, we have hand signals, and everybody works it out. We have baby strollers on the streets, we have donkeys on the streets, everything, and yet we work it all out. When I was in the United States, I tried to get contact with the person driving next to me, and they never even looked. They're so busy with this little hook in their nose obeying what the government says they need to do. So it really doesn't work. So I guess I kind of got myself off track. But, oh, yes, go to the sheriff's page and watch those videos. It's very impressive. And study these memos that are being posted. And what you can do is you can call. I think that we should post a list of all the county sheriffs so that all members can identify who their county sheriff is, or they could, you know, probably it's accessible in your local telephone directory, and you could even submit to us what they all are. But call them.
They could also print out the memos and send them to their sheriff to make sure they get them. And maybe even send that first, let them know, hey, I want to send you some stuff. I'd like to come over and talk with you. And groups should get together to go talk to their sheriffs. Let's get the sheriffs on board. Make sure that they know the law. Make sure they understand what the Constitution actually says and what their duties really are. But go ahead, Linda.
Well, yes, that's exactly what we want to do, is make sure that they have it, let them know that we've given it to them in advance so they can read it, and that we'd like to take them to breakfast or lunch or something, or at least have some time in their office for half an hour, and that there'll be a couple of us coming and explain it to them. And I think that we're going to find that there are a lot of sheriffs that feel a lot of pressure coming from corporate America, and when they find out that they have the people behind them, they will be very happy to start correcting things. Now, if we do find a sheriff who says, yeah, you know, I'll enforce this default that you have, we are going to do a campaign of contacting every member in that county and all of the adjoining counties to be at his side when he goes in to take the child out of the foster home care or to release the person from prison, so that everyone can see he is elected by us and we support what he's doing. So that's, I hope, a good introduction of what we're doing now and why we needed to take this time to fully put into place the resistance strategy so that we have an answer to them and nobody just sits on the default after it happens, and we'll be able to start putting more people up on the success section. Is there anything else you'd like me to speak to?
All right, that's good. Appreciate it. If there's anything else you need to mention other than that, we'll move on.
Okay, so
Paul, I see Paul is out there. Let me move to Paul. Paul is from Long Island, and he's been giving us updates on silver and gold, particularly silver. And, of course, there's a lot of things happening in the market today. So Paul is going to fill us in on some other things. So, Paul, go right ahead. You got the mic.
You got me? You hear me?
You got it. We got you.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to go brief. A couple of months ago, if you remember, we were talking about the effect China was going to have on our stock market. The markets are very, very shaky. Here we are 2 months later. One way or another, you know, the Dow is down 2,000 points. The markets are very nervous. They're nervous about the global markets. They're nervous about interest rate hikes possibly coming. If interest rate hikes come and they're of any decent amount, they're going to literally kill our economy and the global economy. There's just no ability to put money back into the Fed or the Treasury. And we all know you only need a basic understanding of economics that the hat is running out of rabbits to pull out of it. You know, there's talk about them devaluating our currency, which might be the only way out of this mess. Because all they do is increase spending and entitlements, as we all know. And, you know, you pull the plug on the free money, and this is going to come crashing down. The futures price on silver, get it physically, is costing between $3 to $6 more than the price you see listed on the futures exchange. There is quite a grab on for it. There's quite a shortage. The banks are buying it like crazy. Gold is being bought also. It's just that silver still, you know, is a lot of bang for the buck and has tremendous upside. And I see by early spring next year, silver can easily double from what it is right now. It's already, as I said, trading for $5 more than the futures price if you really want to get your hands on it. Things are not looking great. We all know this. I don't have the crystal ball to say when. I do know, like I said, that they cannot bring money back in to the Fed or the Treasury with interest rates because they'll just kill everything. They'll probably have to do it with the currency. I just advocate everybody, listen, if you're not one of those people who can spend $50,000, start spending $500. You know, that money that you throw away every month, start socking it into silver. Silver's going to go up a lot. There's quite a grab on for it right now. So, and as John will tell you, you have a very good advantage. I stay up on the competition. You're not going to be able to buy whatever it is you want to buy in the way of silver or gold any cheaper anywhere else. That's for certain, and it does benefit NLA as well. So I just encourage you all again, start doing something, okay? This stuff runs up through the winter and into the spring, and next year it has a lot of good reasons to be running up besides the economy. And election year metals always run up. I just think it's very, very important that everybody have some. And remember, it is cash. I mean, if you need cash, there's a million guys like me out there. You know, and in our storefronts, we sit on large amounts of cash so we can buy stuff over the counter. So it's an hour to turn it into cash if you needed to turn it into cash. Ultimately, it will be better than cash. Or it'll make your cash worth 2 to 3 times as much, whatever's working at the time. So Okay? I just want to encourage everybody, start doing something. Okay? And if you can take a position or start doing some asset allocation and you haven't done it yet, this is the time to do it. Okay? It is still, relatively speaking, cheap. Okay? Pre 1965 silver coinage was selling for $42,000 for a $1,000 face value bag in 2010. Right now, that same bag is $16,000. So that's when you want to do it, when it's low. Okay? All right, that's all I wanted to add, John. I appreciate the time.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Okay, let me clear the queue for right now. One other thing I wanted to bring up that we added on this weekend, people might want to go take a look at it. You can go to internationallibertyalliance.org. That's internationallibertyalliance.org. You can also find a link on our directory that says International Liberty Alliance. So either way, you can get there from that direction. Now, we pulled together a committee of people, some really seriously minded people who are going to put in a lot of time. They're going to start taking some of the important things that we have up on National Liberty Alliance and start interpreting it into other languages. And we're getting ready now to move international. So anybody that speaks another language, a second language other than English, and would like to participate in helping with this committee, we can use as much help as possible. You can send an email to secretary@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's secretary@nationallibertyalliance.org. And just tell Linda that you're interested in helping on the international committee. And we're going to be working in the background creating pages for particular countries. We'll list those countries. We haven't listed those countries out yet, but we will be doing that soon. And so these countries will be listed out, and we're going to create a group for each one of these countries. And that is expected to grow and to continue to grow. We have gotten a lot of interest from a lot of people over the past year that has been interested in this, and we're still getting people who are interested in this, and again, we have people who are volunteering to help us put this together. So, again, anybody who would like to volunteer, again, send an email to secretary@nationallibertyalliance.org, and of course, if you speak another language and can help with interpreting, again, send a note to Linda, at secretary@nationallibertyalliance.org. Make sure you include your phone number so Linda can give you a call and discuss it with you and then pull you into the next meeting. We did have a very good meeting, our first meeting concerning the proposal of this and bringing this together. You can find it on this page here, internationallibertyalliance.org, or again, on our directory, highlight directly and click on International Liberty Alliance. You'll find that there is on the first paragraph, it says, please click here to listen to our first meeting held on Sunday, October 4, 2015, concerning our first national discussion of the same. So, you can listen into that audio. It's a little over an hour long. And get a good idea of what we're doing and what we've got going for us and where we're heading. And this is going to grow and continue to grow into other countries. And, of course, we are continuing to grow here in America also. All right. Is there anyone else that has anything? Any of the other moderators out there that have anything they want to say before we move into a opening the forum?
Yeah, I want to bring up something with you. But I can wait. Go ahead.
No, I just want to let them know I'm here. I'm a little late tonight.
You're tardy. We're going to send you a tardy.
It's not tardy. It's busy. I got a fire meeting the first Mondays of the month that I try to make. Now I'm trying to stay close with the fire department if I can. And I usually miss them. It's bad. But besides that, and everybody should be doing the same thing, you know, like firming up your communities as the days go on. Anyway, go ahead. I just want to let you know I was here. That's all.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Gary, did you want to say something?
Well, no, just to ask that we have a couple, we got three questions in the queue. So, but let other people go first, and then we'll go from, we'll butt up my questions with the Q&A.
Okay, what I'd like to do first is have people come into the queue that maybe have never been into the queue, or maybe they're new for the first time coming here, or maybe they've been trying to get into the queue and haven't been able to. So let those persons come in first. I'm going to clear the queue because people are coming in before I made this announcement. So let me... Okay, so anybody who has been trying to speak and hasn't had the opportunity, maybe last week they didn't get the opportunity to speak and they sat in a long time, anybody who is new, again, please, those people come into the queue. And then anybody else could now, behind them, come into the queue if you have any questions or comments or anything. So the queue is now open to everyone. Okay, so let's take our first caller.
John.
Yeah.
Before you get started, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jan.
Yeah, this is Jan. I've had several calls and emails for the last two or three weeks here about people who have gone to the website and clicked on the Numana button on the right side, and when they go to order things, it says this account has been suspended. So I called.
Yeah, we did
Daniel.
Make contact, but go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I called Daniel at Numana. And he said that he wasn't aware of it, but it's happened about three times in the past. He thought maybe they were going to have to change their web service. What you can do is go to numana.com. That's N-U-M-A-N-N-A.com. And place your order. And then down at the bottom, there is a comment section. And just note in there, this is an NLA order, and we will get the rebate. Or... you can go to a phone call on 888-597-0775. That's 888-597-0775 and order that way. And again, remind them that this is an NLA order and we will get the benefit from it. Now, I had some pasta primavera out of that tonight and it was pretty good. I've had MREs. I've ate for a month at a time. Yes, but sure, beat it all home. I would have liked to have had some of them in the past. That's all I have to offer.
Okay, thank you, Jan. Yeah, I was aware of that. I thought that they had repaired it. I know some people had made some contact on our behalf, and they were aware of the problem. They were supposed to fix it, but I guess it bounced back again. So whatever they got to do, hopefully they'll fix it.
That's been about 3 weeks, too. That's a long time.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah, you know, we're going to have a lot of people coming in and going to want that, so we should make a special call, make sure they get that done.
Well, Jan's taking care of that, and we have Mary had taken care of it earlier, a couple of weeks ago. Again, I thought it was repaired. I just clicked on it, and it still says suspended. So, all right, they'll have to fix that. It's only a matter of fixing a link. And actually, the link is probably on my side, so I'll take a look at that. Jen, you know, give me a, what's that phone number for calling again, Jen?
Okay,
Jen.
It's 888. Let's see, where did I put that? 597-0775. So it's 888-597-0775 and ask for Daniel.
Daniel. Yeah, I'll call Daniel tomorrow. You know, what? Right now it's a link from here that I control going to wherever it's going, and somehow that has changed. I just got to find out what that is, and I'll repair this link. I didn't think about that. That really probably is on our end, and they shifted the link or something. I don't know, but we'll fix it. Okay. Let's go to our first caller. You've been unmuted. It's a VoIP dialer. Go right ahead. Let me mute you, and then I'll unmute you to know that you've been muted and unmuted. Let's try it again. VoIP dialer, can you hear us? You should be unmuted now. VoIP dialer. Someone calling in off of their browser. Go right ahead.
And this should be somebody that turned blue waiting to get on, that got in here first, have been trying to get on.
Yeah, well, we'll give him one more chance.
Well, he's
going to
get blue tonight if he doesn't get back in. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't show.
So one more time. Someone call in on a browser. You're unmuted, please. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Okay, we'll have to take our next caller. Last call for VoIP dialer. Okay, 661, you got the mic.
Hello?
Area,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, hi, my name is Lily. Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hello, this is Lily.
Yes, Lily, go ahead.
Hello? This is Lily from, I'm from Santa Clara, California, and I've turned in my IRC intake form three times through the changes. And right now I was wondering if you could help us talk to the sheriff, Lori Smith, here in Santa Clara, and, you know, kind of brief her on what National Liberty Alliance is doing.
Do they want to talk with us? Did they ask to have an interview? Because you sent her what?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I sent her emails regarding how my daughter is being abused under foster care. They removed seven of my daughter's teeth, and there's been no response by pretty much everybody. I sent it to the Attorney General.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything for you. Did you? Now you said you filed with intake. You just recently filed with intake.
Yes.
I'll tell you, we're calling everyone that had filed the paperwork before, and we really got a lot of problems with the paperwork, so we're trying to get it repaired. We have new intake forms, and they're automated, that once the intake form is filled out, and as long as it's filled out properly and intake is completed, then we marry that with our documents, and it automates. It automatically just gives us all the information and creates the form for us, so it's a very quick process. And then, of course, after that's done, we then go back and check it, and it gets checked twice, actually three times, and then it goes into the queue for sending, and then at that point, it's just a matter of trying to get it out and hopefully having the money to send it at the time. But so if you got into the queue, now you just recently sent it, and did you get any word back from Daniel that everything is ready and he's got everything he needs or what?
No. Basically, this is the third time I've sent it. I've sent it back in August, I think August 19th, and then I resent the
newer one. Well, you're coming in through
one.
CPS,
and then,
and CPS is a CPS problem, right? And yeah, we had a lot of problems with the people who were working that, but I think we got it all straightened out now. You just have to fill out the latest form. If you filled out the form...
Yes, I did that.
And you've also given the affidavit, and if you
right.
get the docket, you gave the docket. But without, even
problem,
if you don't have
the docket,
we can go without. We can go without the docket. But as long as
right.
you have the affidavit and you fill out the form, we can go forward. And,
yeah, I'm just waiting.
When did you send it?
I sent it about 2 weeks ago, and then I resent it the other night.
Okay, so everybody's got to have patience on this, because believe me, this has been a very, very, very extremely confusing situation. You know, we have a lot of people that are involved with this, and then people put their own ideas into it, or they didn't listen carefully, and then we have this, we have 10,000 different ways that things are done, and you can't do it that way. So we have worked overtime, and in order to try to figure a way to solve the problem. Everybody's on the same page, and we came up with this process of automating the paperwork, and we have people working in the office that have experience in office work and experience in also in legal papers. And so now we should be able to get really, we should be able to do this really well now. So if you just sent it a couple of days ago, you should be receiving something from Daniel shortly. I think he's, we have it set up for 48 or 72 hours, and I'm not sure what's going to work best for him. He needs to let us know, depending on his workload, on 48 or 72 hours that he needs. We want to make sure everything's in order, and then move it into the queue and make contact with you to let you know that it's been moved into the queue, or to make contact with you because you're missing something. So
okay,
we should be getting back to you now. But anything before that, anything before a week ago, anybody who's put in any papers, you need to refile them if you haven't been on the new forms. So, and we apologize for that, but it is what it is. We just, it's a tremendous amount of work. And
yeah, I imagine. And I'm just basically waiting to have the affidavit approved so I can get it notarized.
Okay, well, he should be getting back to you shortly to let you know that it looks good, and or to help you maybe just adjust it a little bit. You know, when
okay.
you write an affidavit, you want to make sure that you put it in small paragraphs. You know, every time you move to a different thing, create another paragraph. Just stay on point.
Right.
Just tell the story as if you're telling your neighbor the story, and times, places, on or about, and,
mm-hmm.
and just tell the story, and that's all it is. But he should get back to you soon and let you know, and to be able to get that, then go for the notary, you know, to get it notarized and then have mail a copy in and so on.
Now, in your previous CPS talk show, you mentioned that there's something about the children might not come back in good order or something like that. I mean, are you saying that
I'm
there might be retaliation? You mentioned something about the children might not come back in good order. Is it because there might be some kind of retaliation by CPS or the courts if they have to give up the children?
Well, I don't recall saying anything like that, but maybe something to the effect, of course, that you know they're taking your children and they're corrupting your children. You know, the people are not talking nice about you, obviously, and children hear these things, so we don't know what's going
okay.
on. So it's going to be an upsetting thing for them no matter what. It's already upsetting.
Okay.
It's going to be more upsetting, and eventually they'll acclimate to that anyway because children can rebound quickly. But there should be, you know, we're going to push forward towards some kind of counseling to try to acclimate the child back into the house and work things
right,
out.
Right, right. Right. Oh, okay, I just, you know, just want to make sure that there hasn't been cases where there's retaliation on the children for the parents.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything like that. And once we do our paperwork, you know, they'd be crazy to try to do something to hurt the child more than they've already done it.
Right, okay. Okay. All right, thank you
okay,
so much.
Okay, so you should be hearing something from Daniel soon. And I know, Linda, you're listening in. Maybe tomorrow you can give me a call and let me know how Daniel's doing and to make sure so we know, and we'll post it up what his delay time is, if he needs 24, 48, or 72 hours to respond to people. But he has to respond to people, either getting more information or telling them it's good one way or the other. Anyway, Linda will make that call to me and we'll push it along, okay?
Okay, thank you, John. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Hi. Okay, next caller. VoIP dialer. Coming in.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Darlene.
How are you doing?
Okay. Good. Our local county judge, my case is in Pennsylvania, so our county judge in Pennsylvania is retired, and the bench is vacant. I spoke to the clerk of court, and she also has questions of the constitutionality of the court and its status at the moment. Currently, my son has a bench warrant that was signed by the judge on June 4th when the judge had been retired for approximately 6 months, and I don't think that's legal. The docket says there was a waiver of a Gagnon hearing on October the 1st, and to my knowledge, there was no such preliminary hearing, and there was nothing being waived. So my son is sitting in jail now, and I'm going to try to file a habeas corpus and get that moving, but it sounds like it's actually a long process with you guys. It's not going to happen, like, overnight. And I was just wondering, is there anything I should be doing to question the validity of the court running, operating without a judge. What can I do to file something?
Well, let me talk to as far as speed now. The cases will move as fast as people can get them in. You know, we have a lot. We have over 100 cases, and maybe we might have as many as 150. I don't even know the accurate account. But we have now people who we put the word out, and we're calling people to tell them, look, if you filed, go back and file again on the new paperwork. Let's make sure your paperwork's moving, because right now very few pieces of papers are moving. So if you were to file your papers right away, and you get approved, and you get your affidavit done, and you get your affidavit into the mail, and, again, we're asking to help offset the cost, $60 or more. There's a donation to help the cost of getting the mail out. And once you get that out and we get that in the mail, your paperwork will move right into the queue. It'll be in the queue, but it'll then move into filed. If you don't have the money to do it, it'll be in the queue, and as soon as we have some additional donation money that we can use, then we'll file it then.
Hey,
and hopefully
John,
that's pretty quick, too, but we don't know.
I think she said she filed, but she wants to know if there's something she should be doing in the meantime, because they're having secret hearings. What's that?
Did you say you filed?
That's two separate issues. I will get the habeas corpus in. That's one issue.
No, you don't get a habeas corpus, and you have to file a petition for the habeas corpus. You fill out an a intake form, and
well,
you get us the affidavit,
and then
we will move the habeas corpus at that point.
John, thank you. I totally understand that process. The point is what I think the other guy said, I think it's Gary, is exactly
right.
That. The judge is retired. There is no judge in the courthouse. So when they say there's supposed
right.
to have emergency hearing.
Well, you have to, the only solution that I'm aware of at this point for you is a habeas corpus.
Well, I'm not worried about that. What can I do on a larger level?
Look at. She wants some practical advice as far as the judge is fired. She understands she's waiting for her habeas corpus. But in the meantime, they're saying they had a hearing that she has no evidence of. So what you need to do at this point is you need to insist on the evidence of that hearing, who held it, because they got traveling judges and they do secret things. And they might have had a hearing and they just didn't notify anybody, which is illegal also. So
cool.
You need to be finding that out, and as
you go down and get the docket.
Well, yes, but look.
Go to the court
that
and
hearing,
get the docket.
Right, but they should have a record of that hearing. Somebody should.
Right. Look it. Let me
and they,
step back.
And they
listen,
can't say they did a hearing.
Go to get the docket. All she has to do is get the
right.
docket. Go down to the clerk. Tell the clerk you want the docket. Listen. Hold on. Listen. You tell the clerk you want the docket. On the docket, a docket is the report of what's going on. On this date, this happened. That date, that happened. This date, this judge left and the new judge came in. On this date, they had a hearing and this is the conclusion. That's what's on the docket. Then once you get the docket, now you can know what's happening. And until you get the docket, there's nothing you can do because you don't know what to do and you don't know what's happening.
Okay.
Now, get the docket is part of what you need for us. And I'll tell you right now, if you wanted to get your son out of jail, you need to move quickly. You should fill out that paperwork. You go down and get the docket, fill out the paperwork, get the affidavit, and then you can go back and maybe make a phone call to the judge or someone and say, what's going on? If there's nothing in there as far as a hearing and he's been held by another judge and if there's nothing in a record, what's going on? You want to know what's going on. Now, I don't think you're going to get anywhere with these people, but you can try.
Okay, I know how to handle all that part, okay? I completely know how to handle it. The bigger question is what Gary is trying to repeat, is how can I put the whole court in check for not having a judge? I mean, what can the people
You have to pick your fight. I understand what you're saying. But look, when they get our habeas corpus, that should stop them immediately. You see, that's a powerful thing. Now, before they get the habeas corpus, you could go in there and bang around and insist on the docket, and you could even call your local elected officials who are supposed to be working for you and say, look at, representative or this guy or that guy or whoever is that the congressman or senator or the legislator of that district. even the county legislator you should be able to go to. The county legislator has a lot of power. If you see, on the county level, if these guys started questioning, they're an elected official. They have a certain authority. They have an oath. And if you and you can hold your elected officials' feet to the fire, and especially if you bring it to them, and then later on we find out they weren't doing it, that county official's feet will be in the pan too, because he didn't act when you told him something was going on. So I think she should feel free to go to her local officials and raise holy hell, bring people with you, do whatever you got to do to get information. Don't sit on your hands, because that's what they're used to, and that's how what they react.
Well, what you want to demand is what due process has taken place. But look, I want to tell you, let me go back to the beginning. Unless you're just absolutely lucky and you raise a little havoc and they look and they just let him go because the judge is gone, they're not even sure, whatever, I don't know. I doubt that they're going to let him go. I doubt that it's going to do anything. But you should try. Of course you should. But don't waste your time just on that, because it's probably going to go nowhere. There's only one way to get someone out of jail. It's called habeas corpus. There is no other way. Now, of course, you can try reporting the judges. There's places to report the judges, but they never works anyway. The whole system is corrupt. The whole system is just totally corrupt. Try everything you can, but meanwhile, you should get the habeas corpus going, because I think what you're going to find is you're just beating your head against the wall, but you may get lucky. You know?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. All right, next caller. Let's see. California, Roxanne from California.
Hi, this is Roxanne from California.
Yes.
So I spoke with you a while back on this traffic ticket that I've been working on, and so far it seems to be going pretty good. I'm finally at the point where they've kind of done some things, and I think they know that they've kind of stuck their necks out. So what I did is I put together a entry of default because they defaulted. They didn't respond to the jurisdiction piece of it, with an affidavit of all the things that have happened and a motion of default. But the gal that spoke
No. You cannot make a motion of default. You make a motion of default, guess what they're going to do? Oh, a motion. We deny it. You can't
Yes.
Look at it. A default is a default. You quote the law. You get up there. A default must be accompanied by an affidavit.
The affidavit
must tell exactly how it is. If it's default, if it gets filed with the clerk, you get a copy from the clerk, and then you enforce it. Then go to the sheriff and have it enforced.
Oh, really? Yeah. So if they don't respond, then that's what I do. I have to go to the sheriff and have him enforce it?
Yeah, well, what is on your wherefore clause, or what is it that you're looking for that has to be clearly spelled out, and what's going to happen if they default? What was clearly spelled out? Anything? Let me put it this way. You go after them and you say, hey, look, you $25,000, you violated my unalienable rights and this, that, or the other thing. They had two or three different violations, three or four people. It's $150,000. It's very clear in the default on the wherefore clause that you had filed. Now they default. You go down to the clerk and you file the papers for the default, and then you push for your wherefore clause. You take it up to the sheriff and you have them collect.
Okay, yeah, there was no money involved. This is over a ticket.
Well, then what was it? You wanted someone released, or you wanted to be released from the courtroom, or what was it that you... You see, a lot of people, they make a battle in court, but they don't put on the papers what it is they want. If you don't have a wherefore clause or a good wherefore clause, you get nothing.
Yeah, I just told them their failure to answer put them in default. And
default to what? What does that mean?
That they can't claim jurisdiction over the defendant.
Is that what it says clearly on the paper?
Yes.
That if they default, that's what happens? Then go file it and then file it with the courts and tell them to leave you alone.
Okay. Yeah, I gave them 7 days.
You don't give them nothing. A default is a default.
Okay. Well,
it's got to be a real default. It's got to be a default according to the process of law, not something we make up.
No, it wasn't made up. It was over lack of jurisdiction, no injured party. You know,
They got 30 days to answer. They didn't answer in 30 days, correct?
No.
Well, you know what?
I didn't give them 30.
She gave them 7.
No, I gave them 7.
Well, that's not the law. That's not the process. Everybody gets 30 days. Sometimes it's 20. Depends on what's going on. But, you know, if you look, in the federal courts, if you serve them directly and everybody gets served within the area, within the jurisdiction, and the person, and you proof through a process server, it's 20 days.
Okay.
You do it through the mail or some other process, it's 30 days. Has to go 30 full days. But you have to be clear on this. Again, if people if they don't know how to write papers and they don't know what to write in there, you're not even asking for anything, so they defaulted. Big deal. It doesn't mean nothing if you didn't say what happens if they default.
Yeah,
so your conclusion somewhere.
Yeah, I just told them that there was no case. Basically, it was no injured party or proof of or claim of jurisdiction. Therefore, is no case. And I asked them to enter a default against the defendants. The counter.
Well, again, you're asking them, then you're not going to get it.
You
see, look at. We don't really teach people. We do show people. We have a lot of stuff online that you can look at and learn how to write papers, learn the processes, how the motions work, and how to write a good paper. We've got stuff with Bill Thornton on how the process
right.
of common law goes and some of the key words, and we talk about the important part of a record.
Hey, quiet. Quiet.
We don't cover that per se. On Monday night meetings, we don't have classes to cover that because really our purpose is something else. Our purpose is really to get the court back to justice and bringing the people back into the court. That's what our purpose is, and that's what we're really trying to do. Meanwhile, we try to assist people. So if people have been working in the courts and they kind of know how things work to some degree, they've written some papers, and then they get some of our stuff and they can kind of clean them up and make them work better. And then maybe that with what they know and our little bit of assistance might help them to win a case. But an uphill battle. You got to know what you're doing if you're going to dabble in the courts because these people are horrible. If you want a common law court, it's a very simple thing. All you need is an affidavit, and that's it. Once you have an affidavit, that rules that runs the court. It's over with, and the process goes forward on its own.
Okay.
But it's not the way it works today. They lawyers take all of it, and they take control of it, and it's all about money. So.
Oh, boy. I hope I didn't blow this for him. So.
Is someone in jail?
No. No, it's just an infraction. It's not a big deal.
Let me tell you what I do. I write a good paper. I send it into the courts. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. When it doesn't work, I just pay the fine and I put the paperwork into another folder. At some day, I'm going to go and sue them all at one time. See?
Okay. So then how am I going to know if it doesn't work?
Well, usually they'll throw the papers out and you won't hear from them anymore.
Oh, really?
Either that or they'll tell you to come in because they've got a hearing. Obviously, they're ignoring your paperwork.
Okay. So I would just have to have them call and follow up to find out where things are at.
Yeah, tell them that you believe the case is under default and find out what the status is. They're not going to. I doubt they're going to let you go.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, you don't want to miss a hearing because the next thing you know, they'll have a warrant for your arrest, so you got to stay on it.
Yeah, we're still ahead of it, so it's not until the end of the month, or it's about a week and a half away or so. So that's one of the reasons I gave them 7 days to respond because I was trying to get this thing done before the hearing, so.
Yeah, but again, that's not the way it works.
Yeah. Okay.
And hearings are not part of common law. That's one of the things. And again, you okay.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing, too. It's their hearing, not a common law one.
Yeah, they get very complex. Let me put it this way. Look, if we had common law going, it would be, you know, 1 year in school, you know, grade school, you can teach this to children how to work the courts. You can teach them in grade school in 1 year, and they'd be able to walk in a court, file papers, and do what they have to do, and the process is there. And everyone should be taught how to do this, but they're not, okay?
Yeah.
Because of the system, they make it very complex, and they play all these games, and then they change the rules midstream. So it's not easy for you there. But it should be.
No, I understand. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Maud, how you doing from Long Island?
Oh, hi, John.
Hello. How you doing, Maud?
I'm here.
Yep.
I,
right
I,
ahead.
Actually, I called you because I wanted to talk to you about, wait a minute. Oh, because there's that sheriff up in Oregon who was involved where they had the shooting.
Yeah.
Well, apparently he is a anti. He was speaking about Sandy Hook and has sort of exposed that, you know, there's a lot of fake, and he wouldn't let the feds into his place, and he has said that he would stop them if they came, and all this kind of stuff. And apparently they set up this false flag. This is what they're saying. This false flag to set him up because he was going against the feds. And I just wanted...
what's the status on him?
Well, he's still there, but, you know, he's sort of backtracking now, and I just thought it would be important that we sort of support him and tell him.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Let me see now. Hold on. Brad, I know you're here on the call. Make sure we work on this. Let's get a meeting going, find out what's going on up there in Oregon. Let's make a plan. Let's get some messages out. Let's have some people making some phone calls. Let's call the sheriff up. Let's make sure to let him know, especially the people up in Oregon, who are behind him 100%. And let's try to discover if there's any events or activities going on, and let's get people out to those events or activities. And this is an opportunity for us to work with the sheriff. So let's get this going. Ted, make sure you follow up on this. I know Ted's on the call also. He's our project manager. Make sure you follow up and make sure this happens. But go ahead, Maud. Well, if you can send some information to the Courtroom Observers Committee, that would be Brad. Get whatever you can to him. You can find him on our directory. And give him a call and give him what you got, and let's get this thing moving. I wasn't aware of this.
Yeah, well, okay. Is there anything you have? Huh?
When did this happen?
This is that shooting that they had last week.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, the college shooting?
This is where the governor said that the president was trying to make an issue when it had nothing to do with the guns, the way he was talking about trying to make an issue that guns should be controlled. Is that the one?
Right, and there's a website called Democracy, I always go into half-imers. What did they do with the Wall Street people? They were standing up. What was that called when they were standing up for Wall Street, against Wall Street?
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Well, there's a website called Democracy Something Stand Up, and they're totally, you know, for gun control, and they're promoting all kinds of stuff. So I feel that this sheriff really needs to know that he's supported from our side.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, again, Brad should be on top of this now. He's heard about it. I just made note of it. He needs to respond to this.
Okay.
And maybe tomorrow we'll get some word out with phone numbers and different things and what people can do to start to assist the sheriff, especially the people up in Oregon.
Yeah, because he's kind of by himself, and they cut his budget and all kinds of stuff because he was a Sandy Hook truther, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Let's get behind him. I agree.
Yeah.
Brad, get in touch with me because I want to get involved with this myself personally.
Yeah, listen. Do you have anything more?
I'm sorry.
Brad, go ahead.
If it was a false flag, those other false flag horn blowers like Alex Jones and all those people should be all over it getting evidence, and that will help. More people that know about it, and the more ridiculous it looks. The one thing that blew Boston apart is the people had more photos of what went on than the cops did. So that has to happen. People have to do that. All right.
Yeah. I'm not sure about how false flag it is. Maybe somebody did get killed. I don't know. I mean, I didn't really follow it. I just read about it this morning about the sheriff.
Well, we'll follow up on it, Lord. Anything else? Because
I just wanted to know if there's anything that we have to talk about.
No, I got
everything.
Not at the moment. I'm working on papers right now, and you know, we'll be talking soon.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you. Okay, our next caller, 806. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, I'm Kevin from Georgia.
How you doing, Kevin?
Yeah, I was wondering, I'd like to learn how to write habeas corpus. What do I have to do to do
go
that?
Go and join the IRC group, okay? Get in touch with Nathan. He's the chairman of the IRC. Tell him how much involvement you want to be with what's going on, and find out all the different activities. And Tuesday nights we have a writ writing group, which is a regular school. It's a regular school classroom. It's 1 hour a week, every Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I don't know whether they're holding it in this room tomorrow or not, but I did talk with Gary and let him know that it's going to be held in this room. We should just hold it in this room, everything in this room. So it'll be on Tuesday right here, probably tomorrow too. Gary, are you open? Gary, is that where the meeting's going to be tomorrow, right here in this room? Now, you have to be a member of the IRC in order to get in. Anybody can't just come into this group. You have to go join the group. We have to respond to you. One of the things to find out who you are, you have to have a working phone number. So whatever phone number you signed up with, if you don't answer your phone, you're not going to be approved.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, John, yeah. Gary's not here. He dropped. I just got a message, you know, it's 10 minutes ago, okay?
All right, well, I'm pretty sure that the meeting's going to be here.
I was just curious, how does the habeas corpus work when you have a non-judicial state and you're not even going to court?
There's no such thing as a non-judicial state. That's a de facto thing. It's a fiction. It's a fantasy of these crazy people that are out of control criminals. No such thing as a non-judicial state. So they may claim it that way, but it's nothing to do with us, and we're gonna steamroll them right into the common law courts. That's all.
Okay. So just sign up for the RSC and try to get in touch with Nathan.
Yeah, he's the chairman. You'll find him on the IRC under directory or
okay.
Under committee.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, next caller, Fred. How you doing, Fred, from California there, Johnson?
Hey, how are you, John?
Good.
Dr. Fred here.
Yes.
Just wanted to recap a number of things. Number one, I've tried for 7 weeks to give donations to the NLC, the NLA. And I can't do it. It won't happen. I've asked for somebody to call me to walk me through it because I wish to send you money, and you wouldn't have any money to worry about with regard to my paperwork because I pay for it. That's number one. Number two, I've asked for somebody to please get back to me to help me to get involved in some of the different areas that you could use my services. I haven't heard back from anyone.
Right. Well, I don't know. I may have dropped the ball on that. I don't remember.
Well, if you have, you know, it's the thing you complain most about that I have plenty of, and you're not accepting it. So that's kind of a discount to me. I've got nothing but time, and I could relieve you of some of the things that I could do that in your stead. You're not accepting it, so that's a discount to me.
Okay.
I'm gonna
talk with Nathan. If not after this call, I don't know if he'll still be up when the call is over, but if not after this call, I'll be talking to him tomorrow, and I'll give him your phone number, and
yeah,
that's the number you call him in on, and I'll have him call you directly to see how, you know, how he
can. And I called him last week you said, Colleen and I, I heard your message, and I called, and I left word, and I never heard back from anybody. So that's where I am with that.
I called
the what are the letters for the
IRC?
IRC. I called whatever number is on the site. That's where I called and left word. I don't know whose number it was, but I called the one for California. So last time we talked, you said please send you some stuff, and I gathered up some more stuff that's. Redundant to stuff that you should have already had.
Here's my problem.
I'm
working on writing letters. In your case, is one of the cases I'm writing letters for in order to stop putting these people under pressure. Now, the key thing about your son's case here is that they have no actual witnesses, no affidavits. They have nothing. They don't even have a real indictment, ultimately, anyway. And what they said in the indictment didn't show up in the court hearing, so all of that was a lie as far as we're concerned. Because
they've said that already. And each of them have both filed a 2144.
Here's the problem I have. Your case is huge. I have a docket. If I recall yours, you have hundreds of pages on your dockets.
Sure.
That's way, way too much for me to go through. So I need to do a synopsis on that, and I have to be absolutely sure that when I make a statement, that the statement is absolutely 100%, not 99.9999% correct. It's got to be 100, all zeros correct. So.
Yeah.
And one of the things I want to make the point across to the chief judge who's responsible for this case and to make sure that it happens, I'm going to make the point to him is that there is no sworn affidavits, there is no witnesses against, there is no crime, and that in itself is a crime, and he needs to do something about it. Okay,
well,
not only do we have to do something about it, he needs to do something about it. It's in his federal district, he's responsible, he's the guy we're going to come down on.
Oh, if you're the only one in the organization that can do that, and you haven't the time, I spoke with Scott. I said, you asked me to send a summary, and I said I could do that. But then I thought over it, and I said, what if I got Scott? Both Kurt and Scott were pro per. They know the salient points of their case backward and forwards and upside down. And I said to myself, why don't I ask Scott to put 3 or 4 pages together, again, because you didn't want to see a lot of paperwork, of just the an overview. And I wrote him.
He should probably call me then, and we should be very specific.
He can't call you, he's in prison.
I was thought there was a person outside helping.
Yeah,
okay.
And so you could get on his email, or he could write you snail mail.
Here's what we need. Let me explain what we need. There is not one witness that showed up in court that stood up and said this person did that. There was not one witness that is. There's nobody injured in this case. No corporation, nobody representing any of the corporations showed up in court and bared witness to anything. All of that is correct, right?
Well, they had a 4-week trial, and they did have so-called victims who lost money in the scheme because of what the banks did, not what the boys did. And so they turned that all around in the court case.
Whoa. Okay, now we're talking about a different thing. You're talking about the people that they were assisting, and they were doing things, and they lost money because the banks did
something
else. Okay.
When the government got involved, of course, everything got shut down, and those people were at a loss.
We have to be clear on that, okay?
Yeah.
The
point is, John, that we don't know how to make it any more clear to you than we have. You filed a habeas. Obviously, if you filed, you have some idea of what the court, what you put before the court of the points of the case.
Let me step back and I'll explain what we do have. We have with your case is the habeas corpus, and they defaulted, and that's the end of the game. So they have to honor that. But
well, we're in resistance, right?
In order to get more leverage, okay, to put a fire under the chief judge is to show him not only did they defraud, default the case, okay, which is fraud because they had to do this speak and they didn't. Not only did they default on this case here, the habeas corpus, but also the whole court case was a sham because there was no due process, there was no real injured parties, there was no sworn affidavits. All those things have to be laid out clearly. That's a leverage to get to motivate the chief judge to start doing something, okay? Now, we also have to make it clear, it has to be so clear, we're going to copy the sheriff's office and we're going to copy the marshal because they're the constitutional officers and they're the ones, at the end of the day, they're the ones that got to make this thing work, okay? So, but also the judge is going to be held liable, and once he realizes that, it's a pressure game is what we're going to do. That's why I need to get really something very clear. I got to have, look, the conversation here is not going to help us. We have to
okay.
have a personal conversation.
I don't know what else to send you. And the boys don't, and frankly, the boys don't know what else to send you. They're of the opinion, if you filed, that you at least have some knowledge of the case and know where
we,
the case is.
We do.
Because each
yes.
of them, John, each of them have also filed.
Listen, these guys have been in jail, what, 10 years or 12?
10 years.
10 years. This is not easy for them to digest that they're going to let someone out of jail that's been there for 10 years, that the trial
yeah.
took place 10 years. This is not easy for them to digest. It doesn't matter that they're breaking the law. What they're doing
yeah.
is they're playing a game of wait and see. That's what they're doing. And there are two things that have to be done. Number one, and I told you this, that we've got to get together a paper, and I'm still working on it, but I want to get the paper out. I got two or three cases, the same paper. And basically it's an affidavit, ultimately, of the fact that they defaulted, and to file the default and get a copy of the default stamped in a court, okay? Once we get that back, that's another leverage, okay? And that's
when do you suspect that'll get done, John? You've been doing that for 4 weeks.
Well, no, I haven't been doing it for 4 weeks. I've been busy working.
You promised me 5 weeks ago that you would do it on a Friday and a Saturday. The next week, you told me you'd do it on
No.
He doesn't understand
the
process.
It was only a week ago I realized that our filing of the paper
was. Discussing this case in the middle of a Monday night call, first of all. I'm going to put a stop.
I agree with you, Gerard, but let me just point. A week ago, I realized that when we filed with the courts, okay, we filed the papers with the courts, but we didn't get a sealed copy, a stamped copy. So what we're doing now is all the cases that are in resistance, we want to have the people who are running as the next friends to go to the courts and actually file the paper, which is a sealed copy of the default and an affidavit of the fact that this whole thing has taken place and that it's being filed as a default. And that's what we're missing. And once we get into that, that becomes leverage upon the federal judge. It's the chief judge we're going to use that leverage upon. Now, with that, and in your son's case, by doing a paper, okay, with a sworn affidavit, and again, a paper of fact saying that the whole court case was a fraud, okay? So you have the court case being a fraud. You have the actual filing of the habeas corpus. With the default, okay, you got two things right now with leverage on that judge to make him act. And then also we have to copy the sheriff and the marshal. And that's where we're going to get the leverage. And that's where, but
okay.
3 weeks ago, no, I didn't say anything because I just realized.
My question is, I understand what you just said. Who does that, me or you?
That's got to be a combination between me and you because I got to create the actual affidavit. It's a very simple affidavit in the sense that it'll be a standard one because every case is
Look,
the same.
Look, this conversation should take place at a meeting with IRC, with him, explaining to him the next steps in his case.
There you go.
Take place.
Okay, and I'm in resistance. I understand I'm in resistance, and I don't understand how to bump it.
Right.
I want to explain
a couple things when John is done.
What I just told you.
All right, let me let you go. Let me let you go. We've also filed 2144s, and Kurt and Scott both, and they're in the courts as well. So let me let you go, and perhaps in some time future we'll talk about what I need to do or what not need to do.
We have to get together on this one thing. Look, I'll go through the paperwork. The problem with the paperwork is there's like hundreds of pages to go through. And so if I got to go through every one of those pages, you're looking 1 or 2 days, I'm sure, at least, to make sure that there is no valid witness on the other side.
Okay.
Because that's what I need. Now, for us to say it, is a very difficult thing unless I've gone through that paperwork with a fine-tooth comb. The other way to do it is to have someone in an affidavit say it, okay? And then we rest upon that affidavit. We take it to them. And that's a shortcut for me. Then I don't have to spend a day or two or 3 days reading through the files. It's a huge, huge file.
Okay? All right. Let me let you go, John. I know you're busy, and I don't want to burden you with my stuff.
I'm going to try to call you with Nathan during the week, all right?
All right, maybe we can do
and
that.
We'll
Thank you so much. God bless you.
We
appreciate what you have done, and we appreciate what you're trying to do, and we continue to pray for you. All right, we're good.
All right, bye-bye.
John, I want to make a couple points before you go to the next caller.
Yeah,
when you're doing a habeas corpus now, I'm going to question you. When we get these cases in and we do habeas corpuses, we don't necessarily get involved in every nitty-gritty of the case because we're looking for those things of due process violations that we know they're not going to answer, that they're going to default on. Am I correct?
Right.
So we may not know.
On a normal habeas corpus, we're just going to rest on a habeas corpus and go after the judge for that alone. In this case, being 10 years, okay, it's hard for them to let this case go. So we're going to have to do something a little special. This particular case had no witnesses. It had no injured parties, you see, and that's the key to the case on the other side of this thing that makes it a fraud. There was no due process.
I don't think we should be discussing this case on a Monday night call because this bodes to strategy. You don't want them to know what you're going to do next. You're over here telling them what your next step is and your next step is. Look, they don't need to know that. And he doesn't understand that you have a plan because I don't know that you've articulated it in a way that he knows what the next step is. And sometimes we have to figure out what the next step is by based on what they do. You know, this is a strategy game. And some of it is actually a learning game. I mean, how many times have we learned midstream, John? I mean, there is a element of rolling with the punches here. And in a difficult case, you're going to do a lot of rolling with a lot of punches. So that's the point. And the other point I want to make is if he wants to send us money, the address is there. He can send a check. There's certainly ways of getting it to us that I don't know that we need to talk him through it. You know what I mean? I mean, you have an address there he can send a check to, right?
Well, yeah, anybody that's having a problem with a credit card, they could just go and mail a check.
Right.
Or money.
And the other thing is if somebody wants to do something for us, we're just starting to get – we're having these growing pains where we're taking care of the most important things first. When we become real professional, when we get more volunteers that can do more things, we will call people. And guess what Gary does? He finds out – what their talents are and where to put them. But if you have a degree and you know how to write and you have all this knowledge, so what you should do, and you're willing to volunteer for us, look, we can't get back to everybody, and we don't necessarily have somebody in an intake position that would say, look, Doc, you would be really good here. He called the IRC because I assume he wants to learn that. That's what he wants to do. Now, they got a lot of people calling him saying they want to, you know, do stuff. Now, whether they know what his talents are, I don't know. But the next thing he should do is call one of the other committee and ask them what they need. There's many, many facets to NLA, and we need lots of help in lots of areas. And if he banged around calling some of our leadership in the different committees, he might find a home there. He might find something that he would really like to do. So don't.
Well, I believe that's what he's done, and I'm a little annoyed.
Well, he called IRC. That's all he
back,
called
so.
Was IRC. Yep. Did he call the other committee?
Well, that's what I told him to call because he's got a certain kind of a background that he could be helpful with.
Right.
So he's got a lot of time. He's retired, so yes.
Right.
And I'm annoyed that they didn't get back to him.
Look, it's easy for us to drop the ball because we're dealing with thousands of people, and the people that we do have that are doing a professional job. They're all overwhelmed, and yeah, maybe a call should be made, but people should persevere and go through and see and figure out some of the other places we might need help, you know, and then let that process go through. I mean, we got a lot of irons in the fire here, so people have to appreciate, and not everything goes according to a schedule here. This is like triage in a hospital. Anyway, you get the picture.
Yep, I'm going to turn it over to you now anyway, so I'm going to take a break and go get some water or something.
Well, let me get my water first, and then you go, because my cup is dry, and now I just dried my mouth out talking to you. I'll be right back.
Okay, all right, I'll take the next caller. And when you get back, you can take over. Okay, I'm a People is next. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead. Yep.
Okay. I've been working on a case with my daughter. She's in a little bit of trouble, but I've done a couple of jurisdiction deals and one where, you know, she opened her own court and was speaking from her own court as a plaintiff. And here on here and after the plaintiff, it was one of the papers that they pulled off the web, and they won't recognize any of that. They kept calling her the defendant. They pretty much laughed at her out in the parking lot after the hearing, you know, and she ended up flipping the county attorney off, which was not a proper thing to do. But I mean, she informed the court that she was with the NLA, which she is a member of the NLA. She's joined, but they kind of said, look, your organization has never won a court case and then will never win a court case. And you're just fighting a losing battle. And they pretty much already convicted her.
What is this, a town court?
It's a city, it's a district court in the county.
What would they know about what we're doing? We're on the federal level, what would they know? But in any event, go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, her first hearing was her initial appearance. She brought up the common law and her constitutional rights, you know, as far as the jurisdiction thing, and they just...
What's the charges?
Pardon me? She's got a possession charge, or two possession charges that, you know, from an unlawful stop. It was an infraction. It's not a searchable offense, and the officer planted the evidence in her car, because she swears up and down it was not hers, and I believe my daughter when she says that.
What's she facing?
Pardon me?
Is she facing time in jail?
Yeah, they threatened her. Nonstop, they have told her that she needs to get an attorney. That she
did. You fill out. Did you fill out a paper at the intake for habeas corpus?
I was working on that, and Catherine sent me an email saying that she's no longer going to do that, and I need to speak to you about that.
Look, everybody gets confused. Look at intake. At nationallibertyalliance.org, that's the process we have now. We have automated paperwork into the system, and it should move pretty quick when people file a case there. I would say they probably, let's say, 2 or 3 days you should hear back from the person, and if paperwork exchanges goes well back and forth and there's no hesitation between you and the intake, I would say within a week it should be moved into the... into intake, getting ready for process. And process will happen very quickly, and then it'll go into the queue for serving, and that could be another week. So in theory, anybody filing a case now, in theory, should be able to get the case through in 2 or 3 weeks. It's up to people getting the paperwork done. You know, if it takes them 3 weeks to get the paperwork done, then that's just intake completed. Now we've got to move to the next process. So, again, if you can move quickly, they move, and we move quickly. We do believe that intake is moving pretty quick now. And if someone should be getting back to you to let you know the paperwork's is going forward, it's all good, or we need more, or there's something missing, or something has to be fixed. So the only answer I have for her is a habeas corpus. She's not going to win in that court. She doesn't. If I'm listening to you, the story, she doesn't have the understanding or the ability to make an argument in the court and to win it. Okay. I don't know whether we lost that caller or not, but I don't see that here.
Yeah, looks like he's still there, but
no, I don't see him. We'll unmark you right away to finish the conversation. I'm going to pass this over to you, Gerard. Were you listening in on the call in case he gets
yes,
back
Yes, I
in?
Was. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Nothing. Well, they're going to steamroll them just like they're doing now, like they had planned to in the beginning.
To give people advice that don't understand the system, it's not going to work for them because they're not going to know what to do after that. You know, there's 10 steps to something. You've got to keep moving and having these people... You know, or being in the defensive, the defensive all the time. You got to be on the offense all the time to win in these people.
Right.
But it's hard.
It is.
You got it. Just hit that question button and you got it.
Okay,
to get
next
some water.
Question
Take
is from, looks like Crystal from Connecticut. Crystal, you're unmuted. Go ahead. That's if it's Crystal. Connecticut, 111, it looks like, on the end. 1111, Connecticut. Crystal, you are unmuted. Can you hear me? I'm going to mute you and unmute you. We'll see here. Otherwise, I'm going to have to go to the next caller. Crystal from Connecticut, 111, going once, twice, three times. Okay, I'm going to move ahead to Tennessee, Cheryl.
Yes,
go ahead, Cheryl.
Yes, sir, I have a question. Is the common law grand jury, is it actually seated now, the unified common law grand jury?
Say that again. Is the common law grand jury what?
Is the unified common law grand jury, is it seated?
Is it seated? Well, I guess technically we are seated in some of our actions in the court on the things that we voted on that are pending. You know what I mean? The unified common law grand jury is seated in those actions that we have taken a vote on as the common law grand jury to send indictments and stuff. Those are all pending. So the short answer is yes, it is seated. Why? What do you want to know? I don't understand what you're...
The reason I'm asking this is because I made a First Amendment petition for the Shelby County Sheriff to give me a copy of his oath. He denied it. So I'm going before this unified common law grand jury, making a First Amendment petition, asking the unified common law grand jury to intervene in this. It's a reasonable request. Either he has an oath or he does not have an oath. So who do I contact now?
Okay, so you've went to the who did you file with in the county? Not that it matters much. They're not going to answer you. You filed it with the sheriff?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, so and he refused you, right?
Yes, sir.
So he is an elected official that's supposed to have an oath, and I mean the judge is supposed to swear him in. You know, there has to be a record of a judge that did. Now, we can write papers to that effect, you know what I mean, and even indicting that sheriff for not giving his oath. Or look, if he has no oath, he's not a sheriff. Somebody can step into his place. I mean, it's a serious thing, even though they don't think it's a serious thing, you know. I mean, we take that stuff serious because that's what we run our country on, and an oath is something that needs to be honored, especially an oath to the United States and the people. So he's in dishonor if he's not giving you his oath. And there's other people. Look at the State Department. I think is supposed to. There's a department of the state or in the county that's supposed to collect those oaths, and they're supposed to have it. So I don't know who keeps your oaths in that county, but what I would do is I would go to that department and I would say, if you don't have the oath for this sheriff, then please give me a receipt that says you have no oath on file. And that's what I would go marching around with. I mean, you definitely can go to the common law grand jury, but, you know, we're trying to get people out of jail. And us going after a sheriff with no oath, as serious as it is a little bit more low on the totem pole of getting a child back or somebody out of jail. You know what I mean? So we're kind of picking our fights. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a serious thing, but, you know, in the meantime, you know, you can pursue that yourself by finding out who's supposed to keep the oaths and then going around and getting a statement or a letter that there is no oath on file. And at that point, I don't know what you – there's lots of things you can do. You could declare his office is empty and there's actually a procedure, I think, for taking over an office that's the person didn't take an oath for. So, you know, somebody has to do some research. I was told that if somebody comes in and they just claim that they're taking the office and they put a public announcement, that's good enough. You know, the state and the county are supposed to be up on this stuff so they're not embarrassed by it. This is an embarrassment to the community. If they could let a sheriff go out and arrest people and run an office as if he was elected when it states right in the, I don't know what state it is, but I know in my state, if you don't take your oath, you're not deemed in office. You're a fraud. You're nobody. And anything he does is also a fraud. He has to let anybody go that he's arrested. They got to go back through all his stuff and they have to release it because He has no authority under the law. He's operating under color of law, and quite frankly, he should end up in jail for a long, long time. So I don't know. Tape this and play it for him. I don't know what else to tell you. Okay?
Well, what I did go to the Secretary of State, and they informed me that that particular oath, they would not have a copy of it because they don't keep a copy of that. I also asked for certain state and federal judges' oaths, and I cannot get that.
Well, listen,
that's another thing that
it's okay if the State Department doesn't keep track of those local guys' oaths. Somebody does, the local judge. They should have told you who does it. In other words, they don't want to give you too much information. Somebody has to have that oath on file. Somebody had to administer it. There had to be witnesses. You know what I'm saying? So somebody further down the pike than that particular office that you call, because you know what they say about doo-doo, it rolls downhill. So he just rolled it downhill towards them. Now you need to go and figure out who the next downhill person is that's supposed to have the sheriff's oath on file. I mean, look at he should have a copy of it in his office to produce. But nevertheless, I'm sure in your local, whatever it is, laws, statutes, whatever, somebody has, like the town clerk or somebody, the keeper of the records, is supposed to have that oath on file. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. I'd exhaust the resources. I went to the county recorder's office. I went to the clerk of the court, federal and the state, and no one seemed to find or can locate it. So what I'm asking, Gerard, I understand about people incarcerated. That makes sense. That's priority. But is there any way the Unified Common Law Grand Jury could send a letter to this particular sheriff and say, produce your oath of office? And with that, I yield.
Yeah, we could send him a letter, but the other thing is you know, and we could demand it from him for whatever it's worth, and he might laugh at you because he might be like those other people. Well, who are they? You know what I mean? But the fact of the matter is besides doing that, I would figure out who does have his oath. If it's supposed to be in his office, then we need to know that because then we can say that. But not only that, there's some other official that's supposed to have it. And I would hold both their feet to the fire. I would say, well, how come you don't have it, or how come you haven't sworn them in? How come you don't know about it? You know what I mean? And I mean, you've already went to the Secretary of State and all this stuff, but all they're telling you is, well, they're not. You didn't tell them that he didn't have an oath. What you said is, I want to see it, and they said, well, we don't have it. That's different than you going in there and saying, I've investigated everything, and he doesn't have an oath on file. As a matter of fact, if you've investigated everything, there's got to be an office that's supposed to have it that can say, no, we don't have an oath for the sheriff. And that's what you take in there, because that's the proof. When the government agency that's supposed to do it doesn't have an oath, and I would tell the sheriff, even the sheriff actually should answer you about his oath, and maybe we can question him on that, because he should be able to produce it too. You should not have to subpoena an oath. It should be under a glass somewhere on a wall, and that's how I would talk. So I don't know, you know, he may not have an oath. And did you hear what I just said about if he doesn't have an oath, do you know what that means? And they probably know it, and do you know that they don't want to go back through and let all those people go? If he's been in office for many years arresting people, they have to go back through and throw that all away. Look at murders are committed over less than this. You know, this guy is running around lawless, obvious. You're in the lion's den here, kicking around asking for that oath. So you better carry a big stick, and you better have some friends behind you too, because if you make enough noise, they're going to get tired of you. So, you know, one of the strengths of National Liberty Alliance is we go in and enforce, and we pick our fights. I mean, you're picking this fight. Why? I mean, we know this country is corrupt. Most of the people are not doing what they're supposed to do. And if anybody's surprised by any of this, I got a bridge to sell you, because the country is really, it's worse than you think it is. And it's closer to falling than you think it is. And so, you know, we have to stick together and pick our fights. Now, we have a clerk in my county here that has no oath. And she's just kind of dumbed down. She's a nice lady. She doesn't know any better. But she served under three judges, and they should know better. And they're all corrupt. And that's what's wrong with this system. They know she's supposed to have an oath. If they told her, put your hand up, Molly, we're going to give you an oath, she would have taken it. I think it's their fault. She's ignorant. They don't teach civics in school. I mean, I don't know. I took an oath. I served on the town council. I knew I was supposed to have an oath. I mean, it's not. I mean, maybe she doesn't have an excuse. But besides her, what about the guy she's working for? She's the chief court clerk, and she doesn't have an oath. And we didn't go after her, even though we could, and we could turn this county on their head, because I don't know who else doesn't have an oath. You know what I mean? I haven't even looked into that. Now, there was a case up there in Washington where the guy went in and found out nobody had oaths, and they had to close the whole system down in California, I think it was. And then he went to Washington. He found out that they all had their oaths rights. But the long and the short of it is they ended up going after him, and they did put him away for something because he upset a whole bunch of stuff in California. They had to call all those cases back. I mean, he was right. He actually proved it. But they made sure they got revenge, and they threw him in jail on some other trumped-up charge. So this is not a light thing to go after an oath of office. You got to know what you're getting into. And I don't know if I would go in there alone. I mean, it's not where we want to be right now. We're going to look at your local common law grand jury is going to address this when we get into the court. And really, that's my suggestion to you. Work on getting us into the court, because you're over there with a baseball bat like Buford Pufford swinging it. And the thing is we can't necessarily come running to your rescue. You know, then that ends up being a focus of ours. I mean, this guy, I would say he should produce his oath. And we'd be glad to write him a letter, somebody from the common law grand jury, saying, look, it's been brought to our attention that you're refusing to give your oath or you don't have an oath. And then quote him the law. And then say nothing else. That's what I would do. You know, I mean, look, you should have some public official in your county. You should have somebody who's willing to write that, because they're an officer of the court too. You should be able to go to your local official and say, look, this guy refuses to give me his oath. You have an oath of office, and now I'm bringing this to you. Where is my sheriff's oath, and why doesn't he give it to me? And I think that this needs to be a county issue, and the voters need to know this. The people need to know this. You know, and maybe at that point the state attorney general will take notice. He's not going to notice until there's an outcry of the people. Little old you going in there asking for an oath, you know, you're just right now you're just a mosquito. You're a mayfly that they're swatting at. You know, and this guy could be very lawless. You know what I mean? If you make him uncomfortable enough, who knows what he's going to try to do to you? And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just trying to give you a dose of reality on what this is. This is a serious thing, but it's also endemic in the system. It's all over the place. I have it in my county. I haven't pursued it because I want to get the common law grand jury in seated, because then I can do it here. I don't need the national. You know what I mean? We'll do it ourselves. We'll handle it under our jury, our people here. I got enough people here. When this common law grand jury gets seated, they won't get away with that. They won't get away with it, not at all. And those are the types of things that we're going to clean up when we get seated. So our first thing should be get seated in one county somewhere. We got sheriffs that are coming on board. We need to concentrate on getting the common law grand jury. We're seated technically in reality by paperwork, but we're not seated in their minds. So we don't. You know, the only power we have is the fact that we're nationwide and we have some clout and we have some membership behind us. But nobody's recognizing our police power, so to speak, and that's when we get the sheriff on board, or even an elected official, because an elected official has a certain amount of police power that he can call upon to force these things. Of course, they won't do it because they're political animals and they know. They'll be told to back off. But anyway, I don't want to spend too much time. I think it was important, you know, that people understand these things, because this is the nature of what, you know, we're going to uncover all kinds of nasty, garbage-smelling stuff here in this trip and this experience called common law grand jury.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I think I lost her. Was that Mrs. Black? Nope, she dropped from the call.
Yeah, she dropped.
Well, I really went on. I don't know if she hung up or what, but anyway, that's the story here with, you know, oats and things like that. They're important, but they're not our main focus, and you can do it, but you better be, you know, well-versed in the law, and you better have some strategy, you better have some people behind you, and really, I would discourage people from going around and unless it comes up in your case. Look, that's a good thing in a case, too. Look, if he arrested me, and I knew he didn't have any oath, I'd be over there. I'd get a hold of everybody he arrested, and I would march on that courthouse. You want to see results? There you go, people power. But, you know, like I said, until we get in the courts, it's hard for us to fix that, you know, other than bringing it to the light. That's all. Anyway, I'm going to go to the next question here since she can't rebut that, and that's Mr. Black, I think. I'm going to unmute you. You've been unmuted. 412, Mr. Black, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
How you doing? Hey, I wanted to ask about the RIC class for learning how to do habeas corpus. Who would be the contact person?
Well, if you go up to the committees tab and click on committees in IRC, there's a couple of different people you can contact, and you can put your name in there to become part of that, and they have people in that queue, and make sure your name is in there so then when they get done with the one they can pick you up. You know, somebody should call you and find out. Have you written papers before? Are you familiar at all, or are you like just starting out?
Yeah, I have some idea. I mean, I looked at you guys' paperwork, which is very good. I looked at your habeas corpus, your writ of mandamus, quorum rento. Like I said, they're very good.
Right.
So that's what Go ahead.
Right. And we do have stuff that you should study online. We put more out. But I think in order to get all the stuff, you have to be in the class, though. You're not going to get everything because we don't want people, you know, studying it without being checked out and then going right in paperwork. And, you know what I mean? So,
okay, I think I'm signed up for the classes. I don't know if I'm putting the wrong information or what.
Yeah, just so you know, look, at the course is writ writing. It's not just habeas corpus, but that's what we're starting off on, and that is the most difficult paper, really, to write, and we're going through it. We had our first study group last week. There'll be another one tomorrow. If you haven't signed up yet, you won't get into the class until you get signed up, so, you know, you need to do that first thing in the morning, and hopefully they'll be able to get you approved and into the group before tomorrow evening.
So
and,
if he signs up, he can go listen to the archives of it, right? He's going to have to catch up.
Yeah, there should be an archive. I don't know whether it's been posted yet. I got to think if I posted. I might have posted. I don't remember. But, yeah, there should be an archive. Oh, as a matter of fact, no, there wasn't on the last one because they didn't hit the record button, but Gary happened to record it. It's a bad recording.
Right, I remember that.
We'll
that's right,
up.
Yeah.
We'll put it up there.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Man.
But there's also materials that he'll be privy to once he's part of that. I mean, there's other stuff he can study in the meantime.
Okay, well, my thing is, how powerful are the writ of mandamus and the quorum rento that's in that you guys have sent those to the government?
Look, the writs are very powerful. That's why they want to get rid of them. Because it's, you know, it's a fundamental principle. And like they want to change, I think it's the mandamus, you know, they call it an Article 78, and they bring a lot of baloney in that they're not supposed to talk about to try to muddy the waters and make the lawyers make more money. Because traditionally, a writ was almost an emergency thing, and they're supposed to take care of it right away. You know what I mean? So when they Article 78, that makes all kinds of baloney hearings and drag your feet and you know, they start discussing things they're not supposed to discuss. But these are very powerful things, and what's, you know, they're powerful because they don't answer them. They can't answer them because they have to admit that they're outside of the fundamental principles if they answer them. And that's why they're always defaulting. Look, if I could throw a paper on you, at you, if I could throw some questions that you're required to answer and you can't answer them, and every time I throw them at you, you don't answer, you're losing, man. You're in dishonor. That's powerful. That's how powerful they are. They're so, the silence is deafening. They're so powerful. Now, you know, what's your police power behind that? You know, I mean, we, that's why, you know, when it comes to getting people out of jail, we're engaging marshals and sheriffs to enforce the law, enforce the Constitution that's on the books. You know, so that's what we're doing. That's what we're in the process of doing, you know. And look at any if you look at, we could walk up to any sheriff in any county that has somebody in jail illegally or unlawfully or whatever you want to call it, and we could make those facts known, and then we could give him the paperwork, and we could give him the affidavit, and we could require him to act on it, and if he doesn't, we can accuse him of felony rescue, and we can indict him and throw him in the case and move it up further. I mean, you know, that's the way these things go. It's much easier, though, to educate a sheriff and educate the marshals and educate them on what the law is and how they have a duty to act on it and get them to go of their own volition and do this in unison with us. That's what's powerful. And that's what we're heading for. And make no mistake about it. These are the things that they've tried to bury in history and time and all their baloney and all their statutes and all their talking around and keeping you out of a jurisdiction so they could drag you around claiming that you contracted with them because you showed up. And if you don't show up, you go to jail, but you contracted with them. By your answers, you contracted. That's so they can sleep at night. That's all that is. So I hope I answered your question.
You answered it very well. The thing is, they had a lot of this information. Even if you go to the law library, they're going to hide this information where you're asking these public officials about what authority are you allowed to do what you're doing or why you're doing what you're doing. They never answer it. And the next question is, you know, what court do you file this paperwork with? Do you file the same court, the higher court, or...
Look, when they don't answer something that they're supposed to, and they're violating due process, they're violating a fundamental principle, that goes, you can't go to the state. You have to go to the federal court with that. Because the state is not going to poke the state in the eye. It's out of their jurisdiction anyway, because only the Supreme Court can hear those matters that violate, constitutional rights. That's in the Constitution of the United States. You know, so that's where it goes. It goes right up to the top. It goes right up to Moses.
So you're looking at it to take it to the district court or the circuit court, or you know.
Well, you take it to the federal court. When we're in the federal district court, you know, if it's something like a habeas corpus, we put down the chief judge. We as the common law grand jury, we say we're picking you. Now, you see, if you're doing one based on your own court of record, it's not as powerful, but you can still aim it at him and you say, my court picks you. And those guys up there, really, they know what that means. I don't think that there's any of them that doesn't know what a court of record is, but they're going to, you know, stick their heads in the sand and twist, six ways to Sunday to try to pretend like they don't know what it means, you know what I mean?
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is I believe in one of the calls you guys were asking for a case where the police are basically, you know, kicked in somebody's door without a warrant or anything of that nature. I have a case like that I'm going to probably send over for you guys to do a habeas corpus on because that's becoming that's running rampant where I don't know if police officers are just doing whatever they feel like doing because they decline to believe that these statutes are more superior in the common law or the Constitution. So I have a case like that.
Yeah, they have no regard. And something where the police kicked your door in and they
without a warrant.
Due process without a warrant, you know, that's something that you have to file with the IRC because you know, that's a major case. That's a major constitutional case. And those are all the cases that are going to end up going up into the federal court with habeas corpus. Absolutely.
What's so funny that a lot of times when you have these police misconducts and injustices, what they'll do is the person, they'll stack a whole bunch of charges on them to make it look like, well, you're going to go to jail because we broke the law. What it does is it gives the individual, the person, to cave into some sort of plea bargain because they stack these charges up on you.
They're going to pull any nasty thing they can with you. They're going to try to coerce you. They're going to try to scare you. They're going to try to do anything like that. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what the power of common law grand jury is, because look at they do play that game somewhat when we're trying to get somebody out, but however, that person has no control over us because we're speaking as the common law grand jury. They can't even tell us they don't want to do it because we decide to do it as a grand jury and it's our investigation. We don't need their permission. So I don't care what that judge says to that person. That person does not have control over us. And the way we speak and the paperwork we send in, the judge right away understands that they can't bully, that by bullying the defendant, they're going to get nothing but in deeper trouble, because we're going to just document what they're doing. We're coming after them. So that's why it's probably a better idea, you know, to file, you know, with National Liberty Alliance as well, in, you know, with the common law grand jury, rather, you know, with a habeas corpus, because we're speaking as that common law grand jury being seated, you know, and we're doing an investigation, and they know they don't have control over that. So even if they don't fear us taking them to jail, they're not going to like the heat. A lot of times they'll release somebody, they'll kick you out, they'll say, get out of here, or they'll try to give you a very, you know, I mean, my goodness, who was it there? Wonderland, she claims that they paid her to leave. They said, well, how about you pay $50? And she refused. She said, I'm going to sue you or something to that effect. And finally they said, well, how about we pay you $50? And she said, okay, well, that covers me and proves that you were wrong. Yeah, I'll take it, you know. So, you know, that's a real victory, but they don't, you know, people, when you get kicked out of court because they know they can't answer the paperwork and it's becoming unwieldy, that's a victory, you know. If you're released, from jail anyway, you know what I mean?
Well, any victory is a victory because, like I said, most of the time the prosecution wins by 97% of the time. So, I mean, in 97% of the time, so that means lawyers only win 3% of the time, so... they always want to make your remedy, go get an attorney. But in fact, you know, they basically want to make a plea bargain so they can complete some sort of commercial transaction. So,
exactly.
So what I'll do is I'll take and get this paperwork over about these police kicking in the door without a warrant and everything. So I'll get that over to you guys. And again,
That. And listen, there's damages due that too. Make no mistake about it. There's damages that will be put into these cases too. You know, that's going to unnerve them when they see that. When it comes through with a real clear we're for a clause, and they see damages on the table, they're gonna start thinking. Believe me.
Because I had spoke to you before. I'll be brief because I know there's other calls. But I spoke to you before with a case. I think I don't know the deal. Maybe somebody else. With the case was City of Riverside versus McLaughlin. And Chief Justice Scalia was saying, like, most of the time they're supposed to have a probable cause determination with the warrantless arrest. And he specifically said in that case where the officer is liable if he has to take you in front of a neutral magistrate within 48 hours. And that case was citing what is prompt in Gursky versus Pugh. So a lot of times these people never, ever follow due process. That's a due process violation if they arrest you without a warrant. And they don't take you from a neutral magistrate within 48 hours. What they'll do is they'll give you Raymond and Dell here, and they'll give you like a probable cause here in like 2 weeks down the road. That's clearly a due process violation because it's supposed to be done within 48 hours.
Right.
Like I said, without you, I'll yield the floor. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say for them that's business as usual, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'll send that information over to you guys. More than likely, I'll even send it either probably tomorrow, Do you send an email or do you mail it? Because I want to send the funds also. And I do believe you guys are doing a good job. Anybody sends a case, you at least send $100. So they pay these attorneys like $4,000 or $5,000, and it's a shame you guys are having problems, you know, getting my money to mail stuff out. So what I can do is I can either overnight it and the funds also.
Just call somebody up there and get the instructions before you do anything. And
I did all that already. No, I did all that already. So at this point, I got the instructions and everything. So I'm ready to go with it. So,
okay.
All right, but I greatly appreciate you answering my questions. Yeah. And like I said, you've been a great help.
Okay, you're welcome. Have a good night.
All right.
I'm going to go now to Connecticut John. You are unmuted, Connecticut John.
John from Connecticut.
Yes.
I was just curious if you got the all of the paperwork that I had sent through.
Refreshing my memory. I don't know what you mean. All the paperwork.
No, I don't know if John did. I sent it to Gary. What happened? On the 23rd. On the 23rd, they ejected my wife. I called the police.
Did you put it into intake?
Yes.
Okay, so did you hear back from intake yet? Because I'll give a call to Linda to try to push this ahead because you're in such a critical moment. But everything's got to be through intake. When did you get into intake?
Ooh. Thursday or Friday.
Okay, so today's Monday, so you should hear back from her by now. So hopefully you'll hear back tomorrow. If not, just drop a line to intake at nationallibertyalliance.org and ask them, you know, what the status is, and see where that goes. Meanwhile, I'll make a note to Linda, and she's probably listening right now anyway, to pull your case over to get it moving because it's so critical. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Nice. We do have a tracking system now put up for the cases that go through that they can check.
Yeah, you know, right. That's the key thing. People need to follow that. But I did talk with John. He called on an emergency situation.
Right.
Sheriffs came up and some others, the marshals, actually.
Yeah, I just want to
I'm kind of handling it on the side for him. But I got to get away from the emergency thing. Hopefully we're going to catch up to all these emergencies. And then at this point, if it'll be an emergency, it's because they took too long to get to us. But it's just going to go through the process. Because it throws me off of my game. At the same time, I got a lot of things to do and try to get done.
Right, right.
But he had a situation, and we want to try to help him.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that. Okay, John, I'm going to go to the next caller if there's nothing else.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Next caller is David from Missouri. You are unmuted, David.
That's me. I sent you an email, but I see that you are putting the emails after the call-ins now, so that didn't help me much. Actually, I've done a little research on NLA's website talking about what determines what a sheriff is, and as I've mentioned many times, the St. Louis and St. Louis County does not have a sheriff per se. So all the stuff that John talks about sending to these sheriffs is pretty neat when it comes to me being able to correspond with them and say, well, did you get this, that, or the other thing, unless they're the main enemy as sheriffs. And I don't know whether they're covered by you guys or not, because they're mainly only as a sheriff, whether you're sending them paperwork or you're not. So my problem is...
Well, if you're wondering if your sheriff is getting paperwork and you're concerned, just make sure you get his fax number, get it over to Gary, and he'll confirm that it's in the system or that it's not. There are sheriffs that we have are not getting faxes to because we don't have their fax numbers. Matter of fact, we got another team going out trying to get a hold, and some of the fax numbers we got were bad. I think out of the 3,000-plus sheriffs, I think we got about 26 or 27, 100 of them that are valid.
Okay, let's let your email address.
Hold on. So we do have some falling by the wayside. But on the other side of that note, we do have emails of about, again, about 2,700, 2,800. So we're kind of hoping that we don't, with the ones we don't get from the fax numbers, and we're getting them by email. Now, this new emailing, this new faxing going out, we have not started the email on it, and I'll try to get that started this week.
Okay. John, so all that gets totally up too. All the stuff that we send out gets posted. So in the interim, until he straightens out whether his sheriff has the thing, you can copy that stuff and you can send it to him. You can walk it into him if you had to.
That's what I was going to suggest today. Yeah. I put that in my email.
Look, don't depend on us getting to him. Look, we're trying. But the thing is it means a lot more to him to see one of his constituents come in. I mean, maybe he's throwing them in the basket. Now you come in and hand him one. He goes, oh, shucks, I got to read that thing now.
Well, I'll just assume that he's the sheriff and that he is under the definition that you folks have written in these articles. Is that correct?
Well, you ask him that, and if he acts dumb, you say, well, you don't see it coming in. Gee, Sheriff, maybe we have the wrong number. Maybe we can rectify that. And then you wait like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and you go back and you say, so did you find that mail that we've been mailing to you? You know what I mean? I would stay on him.
All right. I'll do that. So I could just take the information that's on the website and pull it out and take that to him, right, and just – play dumb, I can do that pretty easily. Play dumb, that is. That I don't know the difference between, regular sheriff. And just tell him that, I belong to the organization, and I need to know who's in charge here, because we're trying to contact these sheriffs and let them know what their real job is. That makes sense to you?
Let me ask you something. In St. Louis County, who do they have that's sitting in the place that the sheriff should be, the elected official?
They got a guy that goes sheriff, but he doesn't do. Let me tell you what.
Elected, right? He's appointed.
Well, he was appointed, but not by. He wasn't elected by the people. No, as a matter of fact, he was appointed by the. Let's see what it says here. I got it up on. Right here.
Well, the anyway.
The city of St. Louis Chief John Belmont was appointed to the position of Chief of Police on January 31st, 2014, by the St. Louis County Board of Police Commissioners.
Chief of Police is not a sheriff, though.
That's exactly right. We haven't had a sheriff since 1955.
So the support violates the Constitution by not providing for an elected sheriff's position in their county. That's the order.
Well, what happened there is, according to this, the amendment by the voters to restrict the duties of St. Louis County Sheriff's Office, and it was turned over to a board that decided to have police instead of sheriffs.
Yeah, that was to take it out of the people's control, and I don't know we argued that that's not constitutional because what they're doing is...
Yeah, well, we're gonna try to get eventually to that point where the... Because there are quite a few places, not that many, but for instance, all of Connecticut, 8 counties, I believe it's in Connecticut, they don't have sheriffs. We've got 7 counties in New York that don't have sheriffs, and we have Alaska doesn't have sheriffs. I don't know how many counties are up there. So those are some areas that we don't have sheriffs. And there are a couple of places or cities here or some counties here or there that don't have sheriffs. But generally, there are sheriffs most everywhere.
Can we get a common law grand jury in the state of Missouri or in this county, St. Louis, without having a sheriff?
Yeah, I understand that. We're gonna try to establish every place there isn't a sheriff.
No, I'll be right back.
Look into the past to see why they don't have a sheriff and who took them out and then by what authority. And then we're going to try to do some paperwork on that and try to press the issue back and force them bringing the sheriff back into play. but we just can't do that right now. We just haven't got
I understand that. So I'll just back off from this this idea right now and filing some of this stuff on carrying it to the supposed sheriff. Or should I pursue it?
Well, look at whoever's claiming to be the constitutional officer. Look at, find out who's claiming to be that constitutional officer. Hold their feet to the fire. You're the constitutional officer. Until such time as we elect someone, you're it, because you're the guy who replaced them. Now, you can't obey the political powers, the governor or the mayor or whoever claims to be in charge there. You can't obey that person. You got to obey the people. Now, of course, they're going to argue that point. I don't know that you're going to get anywhere, but who knows how that's going to go. Because they'll just fire him and replace him.
Of course, they're suggesting that in 1955, the people voted for this situation to take the sheriff out.
People can't vote to get rid of the sheriff.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's what it's suggesting here in this article.
Yeah, well, the people can't do that. We've already been through that. He's a constitutional. If you get rid of the sheriff, you got rid of the Constitution. You got rid of the constitutional law enforcement. You got rid of the judicial power. You got rid of the law. You've gotten rid of the republic. It's all gone. You can't do it.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you one quick question, John. Where did they put the revelation things that you did on the internet? I mean, on the website. I can't find revelations. It was right on the front page where you
right. Yeah, we had a study in Revelation, and I think. I did take it down. We've got the study on the gospel. I want to focus on the gospel, and that's where I want to stay. Some people have an interest there, but there are very, very few people who really are ready for that kind of study anyway. And I think really what's more appropriate is focusing in on the King of the Court. So that's
okay.
Where
I accept that explanation, but is there any way I can get a copy of the thing that you did on Revelation?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Let me see. You could try to get a hold of me during the week. Give me a call at the 233 number. And are you on Skype?
No, I'm not on Skype.
Okay. See, that's how I would get them to you, to Skype, because there's no other way to get these files are too big to just give them to you. Let me see what I'll do. Maybe I'll post them someplace, and then you can talk to me next week or something. I'll see. Okay?
What number can I call you on, John?
You can call the 233 number.
The 233?
Yeah, 845-233-6560.
Okay,
thank you. God bless.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, thank you, David. We're going on to Gary at Michigan. You've been unmuted.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. I got just a real quick question, Jared. This is Gary Dunn. You know, a couple of years ago, before I really got sick, that we had meetings in the metropolitan area of Detroit, Macomb County, and mainly in Oakland and Macomb County, and they were very so close of getting a grand jury put together. There was 300 to 500 men and women there, mostly men, and when I asked, now that was before Gary Jolly was involved, I think. And I correspond with these folks, and you know my age and the whole thing. We don't need to go through that. But I do a lot of phone calling with the people in the city, and they're asking me, well, why don't somebody come in and we'll set up this grand jury in Sanilac County or wherever it is. And we won't have to go through all this other stuff. We'll just start and go with it. That's what it started with me. My first two or three meetings in the metropolitan area of Detroit was about getting a grand jury going, get the grand jury going, and we didn't have anything else on our mind. And from my knowledge, they had a grand jury in Missouri. I don't know what happened to it. And I was also told, and I don't want calling for Stephen Dean, and I was told that Stephen...
The problem was, even though you had your grand... I think the problem was, even though you had a grand jury going, I don't think the court was really recognizing it. In other words, it wasn't really operating under the auspices of what they consider the court. I mean, we don't need permission, their permission, but we do need the enforcement of the court. So, you know, rather than operate outside in a tent, which they would consider subversion, we want to come right into that building that we paid for, and we want to run our paperwork in there. And that's why it's good if you've got a sheriff or somebody on board that can enforce that, you know what I mean, or other elected officials that can enforce that. You know, it was, I think, Florida, they had, it looked like the county commissioners were going to make a decision because they provided for the courts. And if the county commissioners got together, whatever there is, 10, 12, 13, 14 of them, and they said, we're going to put a common law grand jury in, we're going to make a room and stuff, guess what? It would have the force of that of law, because those elected officials would have recognized it, and it would be operating in the court. Now, you could get a judge that says, I'm not going to recognize that, and there's a battle that he would have a problem with. You know, we would certainly be right up on that. But nevertheless, you know, in order for the grand jury to work, it has to be operating on the auspices of a court. You've got to have some kind of a clout, some kind of muscle. And the first muscle, though, look at 400 or 500 people in an area, in a county, that are screaming for that. Should certainly be able to educate the sheriff and some other elected and police officials as far as the sheriff goes. As a matter of fact, you know, 400 or 500 people, and this was a number of years ago. This went on, you know, this is probably three, four, 5 years ago in my mind from what I read. Look, they could have elected their own sheriff by now. That's what you should do. If you've got a sheriff that's not sympathetic to the grand jury, you know, look at the grand jury needs the sheriff, and the sheriff needs the grand jury. So if you got a guy that's no good, you know, 500 people politically active in a county, I'm telling you, that's unbelievable. You know, you should be able to garner enough support to elect a sheriff. And a sheriff running on a common law ticket, I to me, it's a no-brainer. I can't imagine a guy getting up there and going, you know, enough of this, no injured party, no crime. My goodness. It would certainly open a dialogue. Some people would be calling them crazy, and other people would say, "Yeah, let's go do it." So that's part of that solution, is your civic action there.
I agree, and they had the money. I mean, we had a couple of people that just paid for the hall and whatever they needed. Okay.
Well, what you need is a charismatic person to go in there and whip.
Oh, they had the whole thing when I was. Before I got sick, I had to go to Ford. I was there 30 days, but I wasn't active for 2 years. But they would call me at the hospital and say, you know, what is NLA doing? We're ready to go. Have them get over here and let's get this thing going. That was before I was a member, okay? And let's get this thing going.
What NLA was doing is, if they had something going on in their county and they were mm-hmm. claiming to be the common law grand jury,
mm-hmm.
They were doing
things different. I remember that's a while back. We had that situation. It was a division back then, and there were people going with in a different way. They had different ideas. They didn't follow the procedures and the processes we were trying to set up. They didn't have the principles, and there were way too many leaders, and they didn't want to go along with the National Liberty Alliance's principles and plan. And so that's what happened there, and it never went anywhere because, again, look at, they wanted to do some things, actually, and if I recall this group, and I'm pretty sure it was this group, they were willing to do things in the back room of Denny's and start doing some indictments.
I remember
that. We would have no part of that.
Right, I remember the discussion, yep. Because see, that's the type of stuff they're looking for to make us look like kooks or whatever, or call us subversives.
Well, I'm not aware of that. But the point is, there's still a good core of people. I mean, honestly,
they should join our group and work with us.
Well, they just don't want it. They got reasons. I don't know what. I don't want to get involved in that.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you what they are. There's a different focus.
But,
okay, ego plays a big role in that whole thing over there. That's all the best I can tell you. And believe me, I talked till I was blue in the face to some of these people, and they had their ideas of things they were going to do, and we were not going to be part of that, because the one thing we're going to do is we're going to do it legally, we're going to do it constitutionally, we're going to follow process and procedures of the court, and we're not going to put people into jeopardy where they could get arrested. And that's what's going on there. That's what's going to happen if they pushed it, and that's probably why they didn't go any further. Look, at there's another group, and I forget, trying to think where they were. Michigan. This may be the same group up in Michigan. Or was it Missouri? It's been a while.
There were two groups in Michigan. One was from the western part of the state.
2 years ahead of us.
Yeah.
Okay, and they were actually doing indictments, and they were visited by the FBI, and they told them, you could do whatever you want, but don't think you're going to go around arresting judges. And so they never really – but they have another thing going on. It's like a I think at this particular group, they had almost like a shadow government going on. That's subversion against the United States of America.
That was the western part of the state. Yeah, they had a group that they tried to join groups here, and that didn't work. But what would it take?
I think these type of things happen where groups have already started. We had a group in California, the same kind of problem. They just want to do things. Again, they got a leader, literally a leader. You see, look, you may see leaders in National Liberty Alliance, but when you get into the courts and we actually start doing what we really have to do on the grassroots level, every county is on their own. People got to figure this out, and you hope at this point that we've taught the people to work in principles and to work the process of the courts and to come to us if they have any questions, and we'll try to educate them as best we can. If we don't do it properly, we're going to lose it all.
Well, if they want to set up a grand jury, we'll say Macomb County, which is the big county outside Oakland County, or the big county outside of Wayne, where Detroit's at. If I contacted your Gerard, would somebody of your nature or somebody that's qualified?
We're not setting up grand juries.
Right.
We are setting up the administrations for the grand juries. Grand juries, it's not lawful. It's a wrongdoing for a grand jury to be sitting any more than, let's say, 30 days. Okay. It's just a wrongdoing. You can't become the grand jury and be the king of the world. You can't do that. We're setting up administrations. They didn't like that process.
Okay, I'm learning. That's why I'm on. So if someone would come over, they'd pay the way, no problem whatsoever. If it's $100 an hour plus the freight coming here, they'd set up a meeting. The people that
these people can talk to me for free on Skype. They can make can have conferences. We could talk about anything they want to talk about. But I'll tell you right now, we're dealing – listen, you got to listen very carefully to what I'm saying. I don't want to mention names or say anything particular.
No, I understand that.
We're dealing with egos, and we're dealing with people who don't understand how things really work in common law. And I can't change their thinking. They don't want to change their thinking.
Okay.
So, look at – We don't pull any punches. The king of our court is God. Okay, that's the king of the court.
Oh, I agree with that.
That's another thing that they have to realize. And therefore, if God's going to be the king of the court, then we are the king's bench. And if we're going to be the king's bench, we better be operating under principles. And you see, some of this stuff is not necessarily operating under principles. I've heard these conversations these people have, and they're not right. And they're looking really focusing on the wrong things. You know, we got to focus in ultimately on the courts, what's going on in the courts, and stick there and really get the common law back into the court. That's the big battle. And to get the people to make that'll be free people to get in there and make the decisions both on the grand jury and the trial jury. That's what we have to do. And we have to give those people the principles. They have to understand that they're representing the king of the court, and they have to know who the king of the court is, and that they have to operate with principles, a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. It's not a political thing. It's not a power struggle thing. It's not an ego thing. It's a just thing. And we have had problems with people, California, Michigan, Missouri, out west there somewhere, Kansas, Colorado, and Florida. we've had problems in all of those particular states where people are doing something different. And, you know, they could do whatever they want, but it's not what we're doing. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand. I've been a patriot for since I started to learn, and, you know, back 40 years ago. And I understand the ego and the money thing with the Patriots. Patriots for hire are my just favorite people. Okay. But I just, if there's a process where we could get to the court, we get to the grand jury, if there's a process, like the intent was to start like that when the first meeting I went to there, and we could get right to it and get a grand jury set up. I heard what Gerard was saying. That's why I punched in. If we could get that process and get our leaders taught, would that work?
Well, it's getting administrations, not a grand jury. Okay, now it is true we are operating as a grand jury, as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We've been operating as that for a long time, and we're going to continue to operate under that because we're on the same case. The same case, the case is to get the people into the courtrooms. Once the people are in the courtrooms, we're not going to sit as grand jurors no more. We're administrators. Those people who decide not to be administrators, they can go right into the pool, and they may sit on the grand jury or the trial jury.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So,
yeah. Okay.
But,
yeah,
you know, look
the only
at
way you're
Gary's
get a
out
grand
your way.
Jury.
Why don't you talk with Gary? Because I know Gary knows a lot of the players out there, the people, and he may remember a lot more than I do of what was going on out there. And so get a hold of Gary, and when you get a hold of Gary and you talk with him, tell him to try to get me on the phone at the same time.
Oh, I do talk to Gary, yes, no problem there.
Okay.
Yeah,
what does he say?
I really discussed that part with him because there's a couple people that, you know, we're not naming any names, that want nothing to do with Gary, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it is.
Right. Well, look,
right.
The only
well,
way
again,
you're
you
get
know,
the
I'm familiar with that group.
See, I'm trying to get. My point is, you know, can we get by the personalities and can we get people in that I know that are really interested in doing a grand jury? Honestly, do the grand jury. They know who the king is. They know all these things.
Well, look at look.
They need
look
to build
it.
Their county. They need to build the administrations. They need to get a sheriff behind them. They need to get maybe a county commissioner group behind them. This is what you should be building in the county. The only way you're going to get a grand jury is when it gets welcomed in because we've educated them and we've held their feet to the fire and they're willing to obey the law. Now, when all those things fall together, then your grand jury gets in. I mean, look at. We got a couple of sheriffs that say they're willing to arrest judges that don't let us in. But you know what? You can't run over there and arrest a judge if you're not ready, if he's not ready, if the people are not ready. You have to have people in your county. He has to be supported because the first thing they're going to do is they're going to come after that sheriff. I'm telling you what the process is right now. Those people want to go in and they don't want to do a certain process and they want to operate out of Denny's. And, I mean, look, the only time you're going to operate out of Denny's and do all that stuff is if the world ends, there's no money, there's no gasoline, and you put your town back together. Now you're going to be in Denny's and you're going to be setting your own grand juries up. That's the only time that that's legal and lawful.
If Denny's
right
around.
Now, we want our buildings and we want the officials that are claiming to be those people with the oath to the Constitution, we want them to bless us in, and we're going to force them. We're going to hold their feet to the fire. And when it comes time to pick a grand jury, hopefully you've got your four administrators that pick them and run them through their eight-hour course and explain to them what their job is.
Yeah.
See, look, people don't want to hear me talk like this because it sounds too much like what? W-O-R-K, work.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
It's nice to get the gun down off the shelf and go in there and say, "Now do it." But you know how that doesn't work out because I was a tyrant to my kids when I was first married. You know, when I first had kids, you got to do it my way or the highway. And then you find out that guess what? They learn how to do it their way, even around the highway. You know what I mean? So you can't.
Well, see these guys. Well, there's a group that wants to meet, and I'm about 100 miles from Detroit, and I don't travel too much anymore myself, but I can. But they're willing to come pick me up, and we'll meet probably a nice core of people, maybe 25, up to 50 people that are really staunch, strong believers in the Constitution, believe like you believe. There's not a problem there. There's no ego amongst the bunch, okay? That I do know. This particular group, that's the one I was, you know, fellowshipping with. And what time are you thinking it's going to take to get the surround? If you got a time table of some kind, I know you guys.
We got a lot of irons in the fire that were fanning the flame.
It's all in God's timing. Look, what's going to make this work is what's called a landslide. We're very close, I think, to that. It could happen any day, but it could be still months from now. We don't know. Yeah. You know, this whole thing is God's timing. We believe, I believe, and I know the leadership of the National Liberty Alliance believes that this is. We're doing God's work because we're really working to get justice, the king of the court, Christ, back into the courtroom. And he is the king of the court. And we believe that that's God's work. Now, we don't know for sure what God's will is, of course, whether this is what he's going to do in the world at this time or what. But apparently he's doing something with it because we are getting a lot of success in many different ways. Some people may not see it as success, but we do. And we're also getting some people out of jail, and I think we're going to get a lot more people. And again, it's going to depend on the landslide. I truly believe that this is going to happen, but who knows when exactly. I think it's not going to be all that far off, but I can't say it's going to happen tomorrow. I just don't know.
Here's the other thing. You've got to be ready for it when it happens. See, I always have a fear of success. That we're going to get in a couple of courts all of a sudden simultaneously. Now you got to get busy and handle this thing. You know what I mean? Now the work begins, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm telling you is getting those administrations set up in those counties and those people in those counties and finding a good sheriff in those counties, we don't have a lot of time. I'm afraid that the monetary system is they're going to try to change something. You know, it's going down. There's no doubt in my mind it's going down. What goes into that?
By the way, we are out of time, so let's wind it.
Yeah. I yield, and I want to thank you very, very much.
Yeah.
Well, answered a lot of questions.
And if those people want to talk, we'll talk.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Get a hold of you.
Well, I'll kind of be the intermediate guy, so. You won't have to put up with any harassment, okay?
Right. Look, we always thought that those smaller counties would be first because there's less. It's easier to take them over with like-minded people than there is here in the Northeast.
Well, we could do it in Sanilac County here, which is my county.
That's why you need to get on the stick because it's a possibility there. You get into some of these places over here, you might as well, oh, my goodness, I don't know what to tell you. You'd be in Sodom and Gomorrah or something because it's that bad. But, you know, relatively speaking. So that's the idea. And so if you could work it over there, I think our success will come out of one of the littler counties out west and march across the nation. So if you think that you can do that, get it going. We'll, like John said, we'll talk. We'll do whatever we have to do to help facilitate that. All right, I'm going to yield.
I yield. Night.
All right, that brings us to the end. There are some still callers left, but we'll try to get you in the beginning next week if you pop into the queue in the beginning. We'll see you all next Monday. Thank you.